This is program number 0107.
This program was made possible in part by a grant from Organic Valley Family of Farms, organic and farmer-owned since 1988. Learn more at organicvalley.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. If you're filling up your tank for the weekend, you might also be considering another choice of transportation. Gas prices have reached new highs.
The surge in gas prices like an ill wind blowing.
It's almost as though this is sort of violent weather and it's moving from the west to the east. It's coming to a theater near you, I'm afraid.
Tom Closa, Oil Price Information Service. He expects the price to rise more by Memorial Day. What can we do about it?
We are seeing people driving less.
Or even not at all.
I just sold my BMW last week. Because I can no longer afford to drive it.
$3.13 a gallon, highest national average ever. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
The military announced today the deaths of five more American soldiers in Iraq. Three died in an explosion in Diyala province, where the violence has stepped up since the Baghdad security operations began. CBS News military analyst, retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland.
We've seen a significant shift by Al-Qaeda in some ways away from Anbar province, where they'd operated for so many years, now to Diyala. Perhaps because they're feeling heat at Anbar, so this could be positive. But they also see Diyala as a location rich with opportunities for them to strike and cause problems between the various ethnic groups.
Two other soldiers died south of Baghdad and nine were wounded. No deal. White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolton nixed the Democrats' latest Iraq funding bill. They had included a deadline for withdrawal, but said the president could waive it.
A timeline for withdrawal, whether waivable or not, would be a very counterproductive move. While General Petraeus is pursuing a plan with troops in the field at this moment that has some prospect for success.
A government report out today says more than $300 billion has been spent on the war in Iraq. Scientists are still trying to get those two humpback whales to turn around and head back out to sea. They're stranded about 90 miles up the Sacramento River. CBS News correspondent Manuel Gallegos is monitoring the latest efforts.
What they're doing so far, and they're going to continue to do, at least for another day, is to play whale sounds, feeding sounds, and social sounds from Alaskan humpback whales recorded from them, to try to entice the whales and lure them back out to the San Francisco Bay. But so far it hasn't been working at all.
So they may try boats next to steer the whales, a mother and calf, back to safer waters. Michael Jackson's lawyers have dropped their attempt to stop an auction of some of his personal belongings. Ed Lawrence of KLAS has more from Las Vegas.
We're talking about 1,100 Jackson family items set for auction at the Hard Rock. These are items from the early Jackson 5 era all the way through the 80s. And his Thriller album. We're talking about clothes, the famous glove that he wore in the 80s, or one of them. And the transportation company that owns all of these items says the whole lot is worth $50 million.
On Wall Street today, the Dow finished 79 points higher and closed above 13,500 for the first time. It's the Dow's 24th record close. This is CBS News.
When your car or truck is ready for a set of new tires, sometimes your wallet's not. So what to do? Hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership.
Take a tip for me.
Right now, when you use our genuine service credit card, you'll get no payments or interest until 2008 when you spend $150 or more. And we'll even beat your best price on tires, guaranteed. Bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price. New tires, installed by Ford trained experts, with no payments or interest until 2008. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer today. Hurry, offer ends June 30th. No payments and no interest if paid by January 2008. If not paid, interest accrues from purchase date. Variable APR is 23.99% as of 3107. Fixed APR 28.99% on all accounts in default. Minimum finance charge $1.50. Existing cardholders see current agreement for standard terms. Subject to credit approval by GE Money Bank. See participating dealer for details.
The family of Jerry Falwell has decided where he'll be buried.
The Reverend Jerry Falwell had told his family he wanted to be laid to rest on his Liberty University campus in Lynchburg, Virginia. They've decided upon a grassy lawn in front of a historic mansion where the 73-year-old Falwell had his office. Falwell's funeral will be next Tuesday, followed by a private burial service.
CBS News correspondent Jim Crisula. Falwell died on Tuesday after collapsing in his office. They found the ashes of Star Trek actor James Doohan, who played Scotty on the popular TV series. series. His remains blasted off aboard a rocket last month, then got lost when the rocket returned to Earth. The capsule containing the ashes will now be returned to his family. She may stand out, but she'll be part of the crowd of gondoliers maneuvering through the canals of Venice. A German woman has won the right to navigate the city's canals, despite having flunked her gondolier exam more than once. But she does have a boat and a license, and officials say that should be enough. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
What are you really getting at most burger joints? Could it be a bigger waistline and a lack of energy, too? So how about great flavor without the flab and fat? The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals fit into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle, with a choice of tasty subs with 6 grams of fat or less, better-for-you sides and a drink. The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals. Subway. Eat fresh.
Fat content refers to regular 6-inch sub and white or eat bread without condiments that contain fat. See store for additional nutritional information, including sodium content. Subway is a registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc.
Here at Ortho, we get stories like this all the time.
For my kids, the backyard is their playroom. Too bad they were sharing it with nasty bugs. So I turned to Ortho. With Ortho Bug Be Gone Max, I can wipe out ants, fleas, and ticks and keep them away for 3 whole months. And now my kids don't have to share their playroom with dangerous bugs.
Tell your story. Read others. Find out how to solve your bug problem. All at orthoprotects.com. This weekend, protect your lawn from bugs with Ortho Bug Be Gone Max. Follow directions on label.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show. I am your humble host, delighted you're with us. We've got a lot to talk about this hour. Larry Korb is going to join us in about 30 minutes. He is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress in Washington. He served in the Reagan administration as an undersecretary of defense, and we're going to talk about the threat from the White House to veto a 3.5% raise for America's troops in uniform. And we're going to ask the question, who really does support the troops, and is this another indication of the false rhetoric and promises of George W. Bush? That's ahead later this hour. But first, we're going to take a closer look at Rudolph Giuliani. And if you'd like to call with a question or comment, of course, our lines are always open for you. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And whenever you like, you can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. Joining me now is Michael Shearer. He is a writer at Salon.com, used to be at Mother Jones. We've talked on many occasions before. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me, Peter.
Well, it's my pleasure. And thanks for doing some research and digging into the activities of Rudy Giuliani. Just recently on the Hardball television show, Chris Matthews and Chuck Todd were inexplicably to me singing the praises of Rudolph Giuliani. And one of the things that Todd said repeatedly was that, based on recent debate appearances and his public comments, that Rudy Giuliani owns 9/11. And I kind of choke at that whole idea. But when you look at it, Rudy Giuliani and his firms have raked in almost $100 million since 9/11/2001. And certainly his image, his appeal, his demand as a public speaker, his juice as a fixer and a lobbyist and a consultant have all been enhanced by his image that was generated by the media following 9/11.
Yeah, the $100 million figure you just used is just one of his firms. It was Giuliani Partners, which was the main consulting firm he founded after he left the mayor's office just a few months after 9/11. He also has a partnership with a law firm, Bracewell Giuliani in Texas, which is well known as being probably the most outspoken defender of polluting industries in the nation. Has been at the forefront of efforts to stop regulations of coal-fired power plants, for instance, in Texas. And then he did become incredibly successful as a leader, traveling the world, really, giving speeches and selling himself really as the face of 9/11. Just 2 or 3 days ago, we had his financial reports come out, and those showed that just in pretty much the last year and a half, he earned $9 million take home from speeches he gave. Some of those speeches were $200,000 or $300,000 a pop. Those are levels that, you know, former presidents get, and Giuliani was getting them going around. And for anybody who's seen his speeches, they usually center around his experience in those days immediately after 9/11.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think it will take for the public to see him as unfairly cashing in on a tragic event that took thousands of lives, certainly was a major setback for the city of New York? And we don't even have to get into the 9/11 truth movement and exactly how the events occurred and who may be responsible. But here is a guy who seized this opportunity and has rapaciously exploited it.
Yeah, I was one of the people living in New York on 9/11 and covered it in the immediate days after the horrible events that happened there. And I was also one of Giuliani's big defenders in those first weeks. He was a tremendous leader in those initial weeks, especially when the president was looking nervous and was basically absent. He did take control immediately afterwards. It does not logically follow, though, that because he was able to calm the city and the country in the days immediately after 9/11, he is the wisest. He holds all the wisdom that came from those events. And you could see at the debate this week, there was a Republican debate in South Carolina, his shining moment in that debate was shutting down another congressman who's running for president on the Republican side, Ron Paul, when he had mentioned that one of the reasons Al-Qaeda says they're attacking us is that is our involvement in the Middle East. Giuliani has been very carefully creating this image of himself as the person who literally represents strength in the face of terrorism for years. You know, you ask, what will it take for Americans to notice that may not be the whole picture? I think it'll take some time. I mean, right now Giuliani is really speaking to just about, a third of America. These are the core Republican voters who are going to vote in the primary. He's not really interested in talking to the rest of America right now. And a lot of his sort of macho tough talk, I mean, in that same debate, he basically came out in favor of the president's harsh interrogation policy, which is essentially, allowing torture by another name.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, as he endorsed what most people would call torture, he said, I am doing that because I was in New York on 9/11. The fact that he was the mayor, that day and a few months, the next few months is,
right,
is his justification for that. He was standing 10 feet away from John McCain, a torture victim who lived through horrific experiences for years in a Vietnamese prison in Hanoi, who knows firsthand exactly what torture means, and also has been deeply involved in Washington in a way that Giuliani has not for a number of years in the debates over what the impact on the U.S. has been because of our interrogation policies over the last few years, which I think it's almost impossible at this point to argue has been a net positive for the country.
Mm-hmm.
In the war on terror.
Well, and you're a journalist, but I'm an opinion guy, and I would just amplify that by saying it saddens me that John McCain has lost his credibility for the most part on the torture issue by selling out to the Bush administration, allowing the 05 defense authorization bill that included his amendments banning torture to be trumped by a Bush signing statement after it was significantly watered down to begin with. And then he voted for the Military Commissions Act of 2006 last October, which was rammed through by the Bush administration to allow deviation from the Geneva Conventions, to permit the president to designate anyone, including a U.S. citizen, as a so-called unlawful enemy combatant, send them to Gitmo, and leave them uncharged with their cases unresolved indefinitely. And so I understand that he tried hard in the debate you referred to in South Carolina to kind of reassert his credibility on that issue, and it saddens me that he has permitted himself to be undermined in that way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not taking away the ability of people to criticize John McCain on that issue, but I do think it's important to note what he did do during those same debates. I mean, we now have a situation where the military will not engage in any of these practices, which is a huge difference from where we were immediately after the invasion of Iraq. We had Abu Ghraib, and we had all sorts of horrible things happening in Iraq and elsewhere, which are now very well documented. I think, I mean, the Congress is one of those places where you end up compromising a lot every day. And, you know, I'm not sure, I'm not trying to weigh in one side or the other of whether McCain should have endorsed the things he ended up endorsing, but I think it's also worth pointing out that, especially on the interrogation issue, and especially for the military, it's night and day right now. The military policy right now is that, you know, we don't do this. We're strictly Geneva Convention. That's a huge change from where it was before. There's still a huge problem with what the CIA and other intelligence agencies are or are not doing. It's still very vague, and you're right, the signing statements are still a real problem. But, I mean, we can guess that if John McCain becomes president, certainly if a Democrat becomes president, those signing statements are easily done away with.
Michael Shear is with us from Salon.com here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or a comment related to Rudolph Giuliani, you can give us a call toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And we're going to take a break in a minute or two, and when we return from that break, I've got a list here of some of the clients of Giuliani. Giuliani and the law firm you referred to in Texas, and also some of the cash that he has raked in as a public speaker. But, Michael, if you watched carefully in that exchange the South Carolina debate, it fascinated me that Giuliani was permitted by the Fox News anchors, so fair and balanced, to break the format so he could jump in and push back on the inarticulate remarks of Ron Paul, a very much dark horse candidate from Texas, who is the lone Republican who opposes the war and has raised issues about why we were attacked on 9/11. And I found that fascinating, and then it was shortly thereafter that I read this report that includes the information that the News Corporation, Rupert Murdoch's company, that of course owns, is the parent of the Fox News Channel, is a client of Giuliani's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is interesting watching those debates, and I've been struck by how different the style is on the Republican side from the Democrat debate we've had. On the Democratic side, there's sometimes, it's generally far more polite, far less assertive, each of those candidates are. I mean, Hillary Clinton is going up there to be strong, to be who she is, but she's not really trying to out-macho the other people on the stage. Even Barack Obama, same thing. Bill Richardson, same thing. For both the Republican debates we've had, the goal of the candidates, especially the front runners, have been to emulate this sort of uber-macho Reagan persona. And I think when Giuliani was doing that, interrupting, breaking format, demanding that someone else on the stage who just, you're right, he wasn't the most articulate person there, but he'd sort of stated a fact that, you know, Al-Qaeda has said one of the reasons they attacked us was our presence in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Giuliani did that, and then all the others wanted to jump in. The anchors didn't permit them.
Right, and didn't permit them. Yeah, and,
but
no,
later,
and Romney, at one point, just at that moment, Mitt Romney, the former governor of Massachusetts, said, well, if you're going to let him talk, let me jump in, too, because he wants to be playing the same game.
Right. But later on, he tried to amplify that by saying he wanted to double Gitmo, whatever that means. I mean, you want fries with that?
That's what I mean when I say it. It's terrific to watch. We're going to have another debate the first week in June. I think it's going to be on CNN. And it'll be the same thing. It's amazing how much the Republican Party is really trying to elect a sort of authoritarian father figure right now.
And then who was it? Was either Duncan Hunter or one of the other laggards who mentioned Jack Bauer?
No, Tom Tancredo. Tom Tancredo's campaign manager, Babe Buchanan, the sister of Pat Buchanan,
right,
was on TV today. And I've never seen this on TV, saying, of course we torture, we need to torture. Like, directly saying those words. Usually people will couch these by calling, harsh interrogation, waterboarding,
right,
things like that, not torture. Here she is on TV saying, my candidate, Tom Tancredo, is in favor of torture.
Michael, we got to take a break. We'll return in just a moment. Michael Shear is with us from Salon.com. In a moment, we'll detail the income sources of Rudy Giuliani and his colleagues since 9/11. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I interview great guests, including national, regional, and local personalities that make our planet so delicious. And I want your feedback. It's simple. Go to www.tastyplanet.org, complete the survey, fill out a form, and you'll be automatically entered to win. That's all there is to it, and your info is safe with me. I won't use it for anything but this contest. So listen in on Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m., and as Julia Child used to say, bon appétit!
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
The following is a test of the emergency alert system in accordance with regulations of the Federal Communications Commission. This station is testing its emergency alert system equipment. This is only a test. This has been a test of the emergency alert system. We now return you to regular programming.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking with reporter Michael Shearer from Salon.com, and we're talking about the business interests of Rudolph Giuliani, former mayor of New York and now a candidate for the Republican nomination for president in 2008. And, Michael, as you dug into his business activities in the first segment, you mentioned this Texas law firm, Bracewell and Giuliani. And what kind of clients do we know he's been representing through the law firm? He, of course, was a U.S. attorney and is well known for his legal skills.
Yeah, and when he was U.S. attorney, it was he made his reputation as a prosecutor of the mafia in New York, dealing with criminal matters. Bracewell was a long-standing law firm. It existed before Giuliani left the City Hall of New York, and its main business is representing energy companies in Texas. What Giuliani sells and what he's been selling for the last several years is sort of his brand, someone who is perceived to be a strong leader, someone who is perceived to know a lot about security, to be a fighter. In terms of Bracewell, what he essentially did was lend his brand name to that company. That company is focused mostly on fighting things like regulation of carbon dioxide in Congress as a pollutant. This is the big sticking point in the greenhouse gas issue. It's been fighting, representing a number of the largest electric utilities, fighting fines that were first put in place by the Clinton administration under the Clean Air Act that would force dirty coal plants to install better technology so they weren't causing so much pollution in the air. That stuff's been locked in litigation for a long time. The Bush administration has been rolling back some of the requirements, and Giuliani's been championing that for them.
And here's just a quick list of Bracewell and Giuliani. They lobbied the Department of Health and Human Services on Medicare, lobbied the Food and Drug Administration on behalf of UST Public Affairs, that's a tobacco company, copyright protection and legislation for News Corp, that's Rupert Murdoch, and of course the Fox News Channel is just one of the businesses under News Corp, working for the FBI Agents Association, trying to lobby for their pay and working conditions, Cornell Companies, contracts for the U.S. Bureau of Prisons, and that operator was named in indictments of two associates of Tom DeLay. And that list goes on, including the Energy Department, the EPA, and he did work for in front of those agencies on behalf of Dynegy, which is a well-known energy company based in Houston. Now, what about Giuliani and Associates? This is Giuliani Partners. I'm sorry, that's separate from the Bracewell and Giuliani operation.
That's right. You mentioned the FDA. Giuliani Associates, he did very similar work. He didn't directly lobby, but he would be a go-between between a company, often a company in trouble that had some sort of public relations problem, and the government. For instance, pharma, the pharmaceutical manufacturing lobby here in Washington, hired him to produce a report that claimed on very thin evidence, but it made a big splash in the Republican Congress, that terrorists had the potential to infiltrate our drug supply if we imported drugs from overseas. This is the rationale that pharma was using against importing drugs from overseas, where you can buy them for far cheaper than they're sold in the United States.
And we just have a little bit of time remaining, so I want to tick off some of these firms that people will recognize to just see how embedded he is with corporate America. AOL, Time Warner, Apple Computer, Bank of America, General Electric, Southwest Airlines, Goodyear, San Antonio Spurs, the basketball team. He also has represented Chevron Texaco. Not he, I want to be clear. It's the law firm. Nuclear lab contractor Bechtel, a company that develops oil wells in Kazakhstan. I mean, this is just an amazing list, Michael.
And he's now worth $30 million because of it. When he left the City Hall, he listed about $1.5 million in assets, mostly in his apartment. His apartments in New York. When he filed for divorce from Donna Hanover, his second wife, he said he had about $7,000 in assets. Now, in his filing that came out this week, it's
$7,000.
He claimed that it wasn't. I mean, it's one segment. He ended up being worth, at the time he left City Hall, he was worth, if you counted his real estate earnings, a little more than $1 million. Not
so he's had a 30-fold increase, and a lot of that is attributed to cashing in on 9/11. Michael Scheer, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your input.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Read him at Salon.com. Coming up next, Larry Korb from the Center for American Progress.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is Todd the Taxi Driver. And haven't we had an exciting week in politics? Paul Wolfowitz is resigning. Alberto Gonzalez has one more nail in his coffin. And Jerry Falwell did the world a favor. Finally died. Doesn't it seem like the world has the ability to fix its mistakes? When are we humans going to learn to do the same thing? While running the World Bank, Paul Wolfowitz used his position and his power to give his girlfriend a new job and a great paycheck. We now find out that Alberto Gonzalez and his crew went to see John Ashcroft almost on his deathbed to get him to sign a document that benefited who else but themselves. And we don't have enough time to talk about all the sins of Jerry Falwell. My point today is this. It doesn't matter what the political world looks like. We can change it. By taking control, we too can fix the wrongs that are there in the political world. This is Todd the Taxi Driver saying have a nice weekend.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security, investment, white picket fences. Did you know that real estate is the single most sought after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
I'm Peter B. Collins, originating from our secret studio north of San Francisco, where a fire engine just went by and a fax machine just fired, but I think it's all quiet now on the left coast front. We've got a lot to talk about, and joining us now is Lawrence J. Korb. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress in Washington. He served as an undersecretary of defense in the Reagan administration, and he's an expert on the infrastructure of the Department of Defense and, of course, the readiness and capabilities of our troops. Larry Korb, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Nice to be back with you again, Peter.
Nice to hear from you. And just recently, we have seen the Congress pass legislation trying to give the troops a little extra money, a little more than the Bush administration has proposed. And the difference is that the Bush administration budget proposed a 3% raise, and the Democrats in the Congress passed legislation proposing a 3.5% raise. And often this becomes a matter of negotiation, and you know, a resolution is achieved. But we have another case here where the president, who claims to really have ownership of the idea of supporting the troops and often derides the Democrats for their efforts to put limitations on his prosecution of the war and the occupation, and he is now threatening a veto over what amounts to pennies on the dollar. And I'm frankly shocked by this. What's the background? Why would the White House dig in on what's a relatively small amount of money after they've been writing blank check after blank check for this president's misguided military efforts?
Well, this is not the first time they did this. Back in 2003, Rumsfeld tried to cut the family separation pay and the combat pay the troops get, you know, who were in Iraq and Afghanistan. He also tried to close the commissaries and schools on military, you know, military bases. They fought against what we call changing the law so that if you retired from the military and had a disability, whatever the VA gave you would not be deducted from your military retirement. It was called concurrent receipt, and they fought against that. So it's really been ironic that they have been opposed to a lot of things for people while seeming to, you know, spare no effort when it comes to spending on, you know, weapon systems, tax cuts, and, you know, particularly for the wealthy.
Well, and also the contractors. I am not aware of any of the major contractors who are supporting our military occupation of Iraq have been hammered over their costs.
No, they haven't. I mean, and his own inspector general, which the Republican Congress tried to do away with last year, you know, has documented all of the abuses that have, you know, taken place during these, you know, contracts. Not only charge a lot, the work is shoddy.
Yeah, and, you know, we've seen some cases, in particular Halliburton, where the inspector general and other bean counters at the Pentagon have said, wait a minute, we've been overcharged, or Halliburton has underdelivered. And while Halliburton has been dinged a few million dollars here and a few million dollars there, they retain their contracts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they've paid no penalty, and they're not the only ones. I mean, you could go look at a lot of the people who build these big weapon systems. You know, they have not, you know, been penalized. I mean, look at Boeing with that tanker deal that John McCain undercovered. You know, a couple of people went to jail, and it looks like they'll probably get the contract now for the tankers.
Just amazing. Larry Korb is our guest from the Center for American Progress. If you have a question or comment about the troops, about pay raises, about the cost of the war and occupation in Iraq, you're welcome to call the program toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. That's our number. And, Larry, coming back to this, the narrow issue about a raise for the troops, can you put a dollar figure on this? I mean, what is the average salary of an Army specialist or, you know, a very low-ranking grunt? And what is the proposed increase in actual take-home pay or at least gross earnings?
Well, okay. But basically what the administration says is the half a percentage point over what they said would cost $265 million, not billion, in fiscal 2008. And over the next 7 years would add $7.3 billion to the defense budget, so around $1 billion a year. But before I get to what the, you know, the pay scales are, here's the thing that no people should pay attention to. Back when I was there a long time ago, we devised a system where you had what we called an employment cost index, what people doing comparable work to the extent that we could measure it that military people do in the private sector, and we said we would keep their pay, you know, along with that. Well, there's a gap right now between what this is, the employment cost index, and the, you know, the raises that the administration has offered. Even with this extra half a percentage point, the gap, you know, would not be closed until 2012. And if you kept giving, you know, extra half a point raises from now until 2012, you wouldn't close the gap. So it's not like the military is being overpaid. This is something that, you know, has been a target in the Department of, you know, Defense to keep this gap together. The first year I worked for President Reagan, we ended up with a 14.3% pay raise. And I remember the Secretary of Defense asked me, that's kind of an odd number. I said, well, that'll close the gap. You know, get the gap. We got to get that gap, you know, to where it should be because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what are the pay scales?
What you're talking about is a private, you know, coming in, somebody making, you know, in turn maybe about $25,000 a year. Now, you got to be a little careful with military pay, and this is another problem, because it comes in so many different, you know, ways, because, well, if you're in, you know, away from home or you're in a combat zone, you get extra, you know, you get extra pay. You get a, you know, if you get married, you move off the base, you get a quarter's allowance that's tax-free, you don't pay for your health care or contribute to your retirement. So there's a lot of other things in there, but by and large, you're taking a young man or young woman right there is making about $25,000, which is not a lot of money.
No, that's $500 a week.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you're talking about when you factor in all of the other things. And, you know, if you go up and you become a four-star general, you know, you can make $160,000 a year. So that's basically what we're talking about.
All right, so I got my solar-powered calculator out right here, and I'm going to take the round number of $500 a week times 0.03, and that comes out to $15.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just do that calculation again. The solar power is still working here. 500 times 0.035.
Mm-hmm.
And that equals $17.50. So
yeah,
the Bush administration is ready to veto a bill over $2.50 a week for the lowest paid soldiers in Iraq.
Yeah.
This is really stunning. And the defense spending bill passed out of the House by a veto-proof margin of 397 to 27.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know exactly how this companion legislation might fare in the Senate, but wouldn't you suspect that the Republicans in the Senate will join with the Democrats and more than 67 of them will support this package?
Oh, yeah, very definitely. A lot of Republicans supported this in the House. You know, so,
well, of course, no, with that kind of account.
Yeah, it's not a partisan issue. You know, to me, as I say, this is not the first time they've done this, because I remember, you know, pointing out back when Rumsfeld was doing what the Army Times called, you know, a breach of faith, you know, when he tried to, you know, tried to do that back in 2000 and 2003.
Go ahead, Larry.
Incredible that they could be so insensitive. The only thing I can figure out is, you know, the budget people got in there before the people with common sense did.
Well, it's just stunning to me. Again, I mentioned the blank checks that have been written and that were endorsed by the Republican-controlled Congress, and we have the Democratic leaders trying to put some brakes on. I'm speaking for myself and many of my listeners. You know, we feel the Democrats haven't been as tough as we'd like them to be, although I'm a realist about what they have to work with in terms of votes and the narrow control of the Senate. At the same time, it is stunning that the White House could take this kind of a posture so late in the game.
Mm-hmm. It is. It certainly is. And again, you know, it's almost as foolish as they're doing when trying not to give benchmarks, you know, in the supplemental bill that the president could waive, because let me tell you, and I was in Iraq in the first week in April. Boy, you know, that's something you can use to put the pressure on the Iraqis.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a caller right now. Ben is on the line from Salinas. Long time no call, Ben. Welcome to the program today with Larry Korb.
Yes, Peter, I'm a little angry. Do not the Blackwater Securities people, the private army for the Nazis, don't they make like $100,000 or more with taxpayer dollars, sir?
Well, they do. I mean, yeah, Blackwater and...
But that's okay?
Well, I didn't say it was. we agree. You asked me a question. Yes, they do.
That's the looting that's going on that must be stopped. These Nazis must be stopped, sir. Let's get out there and call it what it is.
Okay, Ben,
Let's put it this way. I hope when we ever get out of this mess in Iraq, we'll stand back and take a whole look at, you know, how we're using contractors. I mean, we have over 100,000 contractors in Iraq.
That's indeed true. Thank you for the call, Ben, and I certainly understand his point, and we can understand his passion. And Larry, this underscores the difficulty of maintaining morale of the boots on the ground in Iraq. It's not only the pay scales and this huge disparity. You know, we have soldiers making $25,000 or $30,000 who are out there in the line of fire every day, and contractors who are driving trucks or, you know, working in the kitchen, some of whom, I don't want to overgeneralize here, but some of those people are earning six figures, and in some cases, they are less at risk than our uniformed troops. And this disparity has got to affect morale and unit cohesion.
Well, it certainly does affect morale. I don't know about unit cohesion. I think the cohesion problem is a lot of these contractors go off and do things that cause problems for the soldiers, you know,
mm-hmm.
by shooting people they shouldn't, driving recklessly, you know, antagonizing the Iraqis. And that's a whole other issue, you know, keeping them under control, because for an Iraqi, they don't say, oh, that's not a soldier, that's a private contractor. They're all occupiers, they're all Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So if they do something, you know, they'll, you know, take it out on the soldiers. You may remember in Fallujah, the military told those contractors to stay out of there. They went in, got hung, and then we had to go in and lost a lot of very brave Marines.
Right, yeah. Well, and, you know, the other disparity here is that, as we have seen, there is accountability for wrongdoing on the part of uniformed service members, Haditha, mm-hmm. Mahmoudia, and the other incidents that have been seared into our memories. But Paul Bremer imposed decrees before he left as the leader of the occupation, essentially giving full immunity to these contractors from both Iraqi law and the military justice system.
Well, that's changed. Last year, the Congress put an amendment on the bill that said the contractors now can be subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
I didn't know that. What bill was that?
It was in the 2007 Defense Authorization Bill.
Okay, well, that's progress.
Yeah. The problem is that it's very difficult for the military commanders to want to go after these guys. I mean, because they got so many other things they got to worry about. But,
mm-hmm.
yes, they can be held liable. So hopefully, you know, that's something that will correct some of the worst abuses.
All right, we're going to take a break and return with Larry Korb, Lawrence J. Korb from the Center for American Progress. If you have a question or comment about this issue, join me now. Bring it on. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Put you through to the Peter B. Collins Show.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA.
Ha!
Hey, what are you having for lunch?
My personal chef is making it now.
Your personal chef?
Yeah, the lunch lady in the school cafeteria.
Kids should think of me as their personal chef. Well-balanced meals at school are very important for their bodies and their minds. Make sure they eat right and take advantage of the personal chef in their school cafeteria.
Stay fit, eat right. Looking good, California, is a public service of the California School Nutrition Association. For help with your family's nutrition, visit stayfiteatright.org.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
We want to welcome Assemblywoman Anna Caballero back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you very much for the invitation.
We are so glad to have you on. We were at the victory party for you, and you were so happy, and rightfully so.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, right up until you asked me to leave the party. You and Lucy, that was it.
Well, it was the dancing on the table that got you. The TV cameras were there. It just didn't look right.
So. I got you.
The show on KRXA 540 AM.
Vote means that our investigation turned up nothing.
Did somebody testify lying before a grand jury? Doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can rule. Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you've retired, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes away from the hour. We're talking with Lawrence J. Korb, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress in Washington. And I direct you to the progress report for Friday, May 18th of 07, for some interesting details, well-sourced, in fact, on the issues related to the military pay raise and the $646 billion defense spending bill. And Larry Korb, that $646 billion figure, that still doesn't include these Enron-style offshore accounts for the supplementals, right?
No, this 646 includes the estimate of what the war would cost in 2008. It probably is not going to be enough. But because the administration estimated roughly that the war would cost in fiscal year 2008, which starts 1 October, be roughly about $140 billion. This year, in 2007, the one we're in now, they're talking about $170 billion. And this is both Iraq and Afghanistan. So they're still going to have to come back for another, you know, supplemental. So defense spending in 2008, counting the, you know, the wars, is going to be over $700 billion.
And let me see if I can get into this jargon here. For FY07, we are still some $96 billion short of the, what, 150 figure roughly, you said?
Yeah, roughly. Well, they had a bridge fund of $70 billion, and so they're adding in roughly another 100 there. So it's about $170 billion, you know, dollars for both.
Mm-hmm. And what is your perspective on the crunch date in terms of the current wrangling over the supplemental just to limp along to the end of September of 2007? You know, what is your sense of how that is going to play out? And what is the drop-dead date when Bob Gates and the Pentagon have to start selling paper clips to fund the payroll for the troops on the ground?
Well, actually, technically, there is no drop-dead date because there's a law called the Food and Forage Act.
I'm aware of that.
That goes back to 1861. The President of the United States can do whatever he needs to do to take care of the troops. So, the you know, that hasn't been invoked, but, you know, let's say worse comes to worse and nothing gets passed, he could go out, he can still feed the troops and pay the troops.
Mm-hmm.
So, people don't like to do that. The Congressional Research Service is not doing that. You probably can go along reasonably well till mid-July.
Mm-hmm. Now I understand that it's certainly preferable to have seamless funding. I don't like it when people stretch out payments to me. Just in the household, you understand that kind of budgeting. Mm-hmm. At the same time, this whole issue over quote-unquote funding the troops through the current supplemental, it's really phony in that respect. And why don't the Democrats cite the Food and Forage Act, cite the amount of money that's already in the pipeline, and really separate the argument that the troops funding, the funding for the men and women in uniform, is at risk?
Well, it becomes a very complicated, you know, thing. You know, because, you know, the administration's using the troops, you know, kind of to push their point of view. And, you know, if they really cared about the troops, as we spoke about earlier, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be begrudging them a half a percentage point pay raise. And it's a tough thing to make, you know, argument to make. I mean, when you get in these numbers and, you know, and all this type of thing. And I think you would not want to invoke something like the Food and Forage Act. As far as I know, it hasn't been invoked in over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think, you know, people would prefer not to, you know, not to do that. And then, of course, the people working in the Pentagon, it's tough. I mean, you know, budgets are never passed on time. I mean, that's another thing that drives you crazy. Even when we're not at war and the normal budget, it's very rarely, you know, you get a continuing resolution, you know, and things like that, which makes it hard to do it the way that you would like.
So, and on the other hand, doesn't Robert Gates have a lot of flexibility to stretch out payments to, say, Halliburton and Blackwater and CACI, these contractors, and say, you know, you're doing really well. Your profit margins on these contracts, some of them are sweethearts, some of them are no bid, give you huge margins, and we need you to work with us a little bit, and we're going to, instead of paying you in 30 days, we're going to pay you in 45 days, or
well, I guess he could, but I mean the Halliburton or any company, Boeing or, you know, Lockheed, who's ever doing this thing, say, wait a second here, we got our payroll to meet. So, you know, you would prefer not to do it. I mean,
I understand that. Yeah, but I just think tactically that the Democrats unfortunately have adopted the language and framing of the administration and permitted this to be about the troops when in most respects it isn't. Let's go to Brian in New Hampshire for a comment. Welcome, Brian. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Larry Korb.
Yeah, you left out the cost plus details in those contracts for those private contractors, Peter. And you talk about the you know, these companies, are they making the CACI and Titan, Halliburton bills 63 or 65 water treatment plants, whatever they are, for our troops or for the Iraqi people. 63 of them are found to be unsafe and filled with bacteria and toxic and other waste that our troops are bringing home with them for lifelong diseases. And on top of that, the depleted uranium. And the private contractors are they're making war profitable. I just got through watching the documentary Iraq for Sale by Mr. Greenwald and the 911 Press for Truth by the Jersey Girls, the mm-hmm. great documentary. It all leads back to 911. What's going on in Iraq is really, the Bush wanted this war going back to 1999 and before, probably to outdo his father or whatever, just to conquer Iraq.
Well, let's stay to the issue here,
which
is...
It's an anti-Semitic war. It's new anti-Semitism, Peter.
Well, wait, Brian, let's stick
Arab
to...
Arab people are Semite people. When
okay,
are we going to end
Okay, Brian, I got your point, but let's stick to the issues here about the funding.
Well, let's go back to the cost-plus contracts. I mean, see...
Mm-hmm. 30 seconds, Larry, go ahead.
That's a real problem because unless you can control the cost, you pay all the costs plus you give them a profit. And there's got to be some penalties, as you pointed out before. They've mainly been slap on the, you know, the wrist type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, one of the problems you have is they never assumed that this war would last so long or the violence would spin out of control. So when they started telling people to go in there and reconstruct things, they thought the security situation would be under control. Remember, we were going to be greeted as liberators.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, you know, a lot of the contractors got to pay a lot for security, so it's cost plus, and that's a, you know, that is a cost.
Understood. Larry Korb, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for your knowledge and expertise.
Sure thing.
Pleasure talking with you.
All right.
That's Larry Korb from the Center for American Progress. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter... Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. Stalemate over Iraq.
Negotiations on a new Iraq funding bill break down at the first meeting. I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill, and I'll have that story coming up.
A follow-up on formaldehyde in FEMA trailers.
FEMA knew of extremely high levels of the cancer-causing chemical more than a year ago.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. For 90 minutes today, the Bush administration and congressional leaders went back and forth on continued funding for the war in Iraq, but they didn't get anywhere. The talks stalled on the issue of a timetable for withdrawing the troops. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
Democrats offered to let President Bush waive a requirement to pull troops out of Iraq as long as the language stayed in the funding bill. The White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolton said no.
Setting an arbitrary timeline for withdrawal, whether waivable or not, is going to undermine the prospects of that success and will not be acceptable to the president.
Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid says it was a good offer and Congress will not give up its role in trying to change course in Iraq.
To say I was disappointed in the meeting is an understatement.
Neither side ruled out more talks, but the Democratic leader said they will move ahead on writing an Iraq funding bill and passing it, whether the president agrees in advance to sign it or not. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
President Bush is asking Congress for more than $90 billion. The Government Accountability Office reported today that more than $300 billion has already been spent on military operations in Iraq. The U.S. military reports the loss of five more soldiers, two killed yesterday in southern Baghdad, and three killed today by an explosion in Diyala province. Very dangerous place, says CBS News military consultant Mike Lyons.
The area is so wide open, the place is so austere in some places, that it's going to be difficult in order for us to have any success unless we've got much better intelligence right now.
The U.S. commander in the area has asked for more troops. South of Baghdad, U.S. and Iraqi forces continue to search for three American soldiers who were abducted when their unit was ambushed last Saturday. If they find those responsible, says one officer, they're going to wish they never did this thing. Now this.
Aflac for small business.
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an amoeba.
An amoeba?
Uh-oh, got to split.
Oh, bye.
No, I got to split in half. You know, us amoebas always growing.
Well, with Aflac for small business, you get a lot of the benefits of a big business at no direct cost to you while you're still growing.
Great, because here I go. Much better.
Well, you can both visit AflacSB.com or call 1-800-99-AFLAC. American Family Life Insurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by four trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
CBS News investigative correspondent Armin Katayan reported Wednesday that formaldehyde fumes in the trailers housing Katrina victims were causing respiratory problems in children. Now, an internal document obtained by CBS News shows this came as no surprise at the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
FEMA knew of extremely high levels of the cancer-causing chemical more than a year ago, after its own employee safety department ran tests in March of 2006. Those tests done on 28 trailers found at least 20 had levels of formaldehyde much higher than the EPA's recommended workplace limit of 0.1 parts per million. In one case, more than 1,000% higher.
FEMA says the document represents a worst-case scenario and that CBS News is misinterpreting the data.
The Dow set another record today, rising 79 points to close at 13,556. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus says 14,000 seems within reach.
The fundamentals seem quite strong for this rally to continue, perhaps through the summer. Again, we've got these strong earnings. Interest rates are still historically low, and the deals continue to flow on Wall Street.
News of more corporate takeovers helped fuel the market today, along with a report that consumer confidence is strong. Stocks are going up almost as fast as the price of gasoline. An update on that from CBS's Jim Taylor.
It is higher than ever.
It does cost a lot more to fill up my full tank of gas right now.
New national average price for a gallon of gas, $3.13.
I'm not happy about it, but what am I going to do? What could you do?
Now, you can drive less. One report says that is what we're doing, or you can trade down.
I just sold my BMW last week because I can no longer afford to drive it.
At the same time, today, gasoline futures are falling, which may bode well for prices next month. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
When your car or truck is ready for a set of new tires, sometimes your wallet's not. So what to do? Hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Right now, when you use our genuine service credit card, you'll get no payments or interest until 2008 when you spend $150 or more. And we'll even beat your best price on tires, guaranteed. Bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price. New tires, installed by Ford trained experts, with no payments or interest until 2008. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer today. Hurry, offer ends June 30th. No payments and no interest if paid by January 2008. If not paid, interest accrues from purchase date. Variable APR is 23.99% as of 3107. Fixed APR 28.99% on all accounts in default. Minimum finance charge $1.50. Existing cardholders see current agreement for standard terms. Subject to...
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
I remember when I lost my mind. Emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm glad you're listening. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to meet an interesting gentleman from suburban Detroit, Carl Marlinga. He served as a county prosecutor. He ran for Congress, and he's one of those people who ran afoul of the Bush-appointed U.S. attorneys. And he's going to tell us his story about how he was investigated, and it interfered with his plan to run for Congress. And he enumerates that some 21 Democrats in the state of Michigan were targeted in what's described as a witch hunt by U.S. Attorney, a Republican appointee, of course, since 2001. That's coming up later this hour. Joining me now is Dr. James Jennings from Conscience International. We're going to talk a little bit about issues related to Iraq and other matters. Dr. Jennings, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, hello.
Tell us a little bit about your background. It's my first chance to talk with you.
I started out in the Middle East many years ago as an archaeologist and a professor of Middle East history. I got so interested in and actually compelled by the humanitarian needs in the area that I transitioned and formed a humanitarian aid organization, Conscience International. We've worked in most all the countries of the region and worked in Iraq, Iran, Sudan, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, all those countries, Turkey. It really is a fascinating area, but right now it's going through, as everybody knows, a tremendous amount of turmoil, and the war has created one of the greatest humanitarian disasters in the world right now.
Indeed, yeah. We'll come back to those issues. I wanted to frame our discussion today around comments at a recent news conference as outgoing British Prime Minister Tony Blair came to Washington for a farewell visit with George W. Bush. And some of the comments made really have stunned me, and I wanted to get your take on it. The two leaders were basically offering a kind of mutual support about their decisions to invade Iraq, to take out Saddam Hussein, and to maintain this occupation that is now longer than 4 years. And Blair said that if he had to do it over again, he would. While he acknowledged that, unnamed mistakes have been made and that people can offer some hindsight, he was very strong in his support of the Bush policies. And I just want to know what your reaction to that is.
Well, he has to live with what he has done, and I think there's no way for him to evade that right now. But I thought it was very interesting that the shouts of protesters could be heard and almost drowned out their voices, and Mr. Bush tried to ignore it, but Tony Blair said, "I can't make out what they're saying, but I'll bet they're not totally complimentary to us." Well, mm-hmm. That's an understatement.
Well, indeed, and I heard some excerpts from this news conference, and it was interesting to me because Blair tried to frame it around courageous leadership and strong decision-making and acknowledged that while it might not be popular, that he felt it was the right thing to do. And in my view, the popularity issue is secondary to the fact that not little mistakes or miscalculations were made, but this was a series of major blunders by the United States and its strongest ally in the alleged coalition, the United Kingdom.
Well, those blunders are colossal. They are historic in proportion. And if their fantasies to begin with in the war had turned out the way they imagined it, then, of course, what he said would make sense, that it was courageous to do so. But he said he didn't try to argue that it was the right thing to do at this point. He said history will make a judgment about Iraq. But unfortunately, history has already made that judgment. Mm-hmm. If you go into any bookstore nowadays, you'll find lots of books on the theme of the failure in Iraq. And I think even by some of the high military and administration officials, that's very significant.
Indeed. We're talking with Dr. James Jennings from Conscience International, their website, conscienceinternational.org. And maybe some of you don't have one, so I'll spell Conscience, C-O-N-S-C-I-E-N-C-E, conscienceinternational.org. And Dr. Jennings, it struck me as quite ironic because the news accounts of the Bush and Blair news conference, kind of a love fest between those two guys, was contrasted with a study that was published in Britain on the very same day from a think tank called Chatham House. And it described Iraq as near the status of a failed state. Quote, "It can be argued that Iraq is on the verge of being a failed state which faces the distinct possibility of collapsing and fragmentation. And this in heavy contrast to the rosy descriptions, or at least relatively rosy, offered by Bush and Blair."
Well, I just came from Iraq about a month ago. And I worked in Iraq actually over many years before maybe a lot of our listeners were even born. I think my first trip there was in 1964, and I spent a lot of time there during the 90s and early in this century, working in healthcare and in public health and child survival, humanitarian aid. So you can go through a litany of things that the Iraq War has done that are terrible, and not very many that you can come up with that are good. So I certainly agree with you. The war has split the European alliance, divided American civic life worse than maybe anything since the Civil War, with possible exception of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Spent nearly $1 trillion that's badly needed elsewhere in our country, and has killed 3,400 plus loyal and brave American troops. It's wounded nearly 10 times that number. It's upward of 30,000, I believe, now and climbing. Many of those are life injuries.
Right.
has weakened our national defense establishment, the both standing forces and National Guard. It's unnecessarily killed 600,000 Iraqis, and having worked with them over many years, that's really very hard for me to take, because I know the people, I've been in many of their homes, and they're lovely people before all this came about. Now, the regime of Saddam was despicable.
Indeed.
That's a different issue.
That's a given.
But I think the thing that troubles me most nowadays is this. I have a little sticker on my desk because I've been working in Darfur, which has been celebrated as the world's worst humanitarian disaster. Actually, it's second next to Iraq. In Darfur, there are 200,000 killed, 2.5 million displaced. I worked in the refugee camps. It's terrible there. But the UN High Commissioner for Refugees just came out on May the 1st, Antonio Guterres, and he said that nearly 4 million people have fled the U.S.-initiated war in Iraq.
That's
2
right.
million outside Iraq's borders, mm-hmm. Syria and Jordan. Another 1.9 million displaced from their homes inside the country because of the ethnic cleansing and the Shiite and Sunni conflict.
Indeed, and certainly it's predictable that many more will be displaced or emigrate because there is no current end in sight to the civil war and the U.S.-led occupation. And Dr. Jennings, you also talked about Darfur, and if we look at the issues in the Middle East, one of the arguments of the architects of this, if you look at the Project for a New American Century and you go back to some of the commentary from the leading neocons starting after 9/11, the overarching idea appeared to be to remake the Middle East. And that has occurred, but certainly not in the direction or the dimensions that they anticipated. And I believe that despite the claims that this was done to enhance the security of the West, Britain, the United States, and others, that in fact we have put ourselves at greater risk. We have a conflict continuing to break out between Israel and Palestine. We have serious disturbances in Pakistan, a nominal ally of the U.S. and allegedly a supporter of our so-called war on terror. And there are other incidents of unrest too numerous to mention. But the bottom line is that we have created a great deal of turmoil while saying that we're trying to bring a new level of democracy to a region that doesn't seem interested in it.
Well, I'm afraid that the neocons, the so-called neoconservatives, are not finished yet. They're not really conservatives either, because those people who initiated this war are radical imperialists, and they have put the Middle East as their main object. Last summer I was in Lebanon following the Lebanon War,
mm-hmm.
and there Condoleezza Rice said, well, we don't want to have a ceasefire because these are the birth pangs of the new Middle East. And guess what? 1,250 Lebanese, mostly civilians, were killed in that war. About 120 Israelis,
right.
I think. And they just let it go for 34 days without calling for a ceasefire. That's never been done, as far as I know, in the history of the United Nations or the United States.
Well, and let's not forget that we resupplied Israel, and we also turned a blind eye to their use of cluster bombs.
Yes, and the thing is that the cluster bombs were, by treaty, illegal to use in an offensive war, but only defensively inside the borders of Israel. And yet, I almost stepped on one in South Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
and that's a reiteration of 1982 when I almost stepped on one at that time. I went straight to the White House, showed them photographs of this, and they didn't really care because it was a wink and a nod.
Dr. Jennings, we've got to run to a break here. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment with Dr. James Jennings. Visit the website conscienceinternational.org to learn more about his organization. And if you have a question or comment, you can call in right now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
This week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate, listen as Jim Ross, president of National Real Estate Holdings, discusses with Michael Yesk how to use a 1031 exchange to invest in real estate, along with our free seminar this Tuesday, May 22nd at the Santa Clara Marriott. For more information on the free real estate seminar, call 916-941-9977. That's 916-941-9977. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
This is Hal. Looks like we don't have a traffic report. I'm sorry. The reporter is apparently engaged. That is too bad, and we hope there he is.
There we go, folks. Well, we're going to tell you about what's happening. Campbell southbound 17 between 85 and it looks like Camden. We have very slow traffic being reported there, all due to an earlier crash. Also want to take a look at Laguna Seca Raceway. Big
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. Coming up shortly, we're going to meet a gentleman from the Detroit area. He's a former county prosecutor who believes he was targeted by one of those renegade Republican-appointed U.S. attorneys. We'll give you the details on that coming up just about 10 minutes away. We continue our conversation with Dr. James Jennings from ConscienceInternational.org, and we've got a couple of callers on the line who'd like to add some comments. First up, Dave in Eureka. Dave, join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
All right, Peter. Dr. Jennings, whenever I hear people discussing our involvement in the Middle East in using terms of blunders and incompetence and mistakes, I feel the need to share my conclusion and see if you agree that this involvement was planned out for the longest time, and it is also extremely profitable to a few corporate special interests and their friends. And so it is a deliberate, willful thing. It is not just blundering our way into it. That's my conclusion, and I appreciate your thoughts on that.
Yes, let me respond. I think when Jerry Bremer was appointed as the proconsul for Iraq, that he had two assignments. One was to suppress terrorism, and the second one was to develop Western, especially American, capital investment in Iraq, to transform the economy into an economy that would not be a euro economy, as Saddam Hussein had threatened, but that all the oil would be on the dollar economy, and that we would be able to build shopping malls and sell things to the Iraqis and to buy their oil. That was the agenda, and of course it went awry. But I think you're right. I think that if you look at the Iraq War starting in March 2003, you'd be wrong. You go back about 20 years and a campaign to destroy the regime had been started and led to the war.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. Now we go to let's see. This is Jane in Arcata. Jane, welcome to the. I'm sorry. Who is this in Arcata?
This is Jake in Arcata. Peter.
Jake, I'm sorry. I couldn't read my writing. Go right ahead.
Well, that's all right. I have a problem too. well, anyways, I'd like to commend the doctor on his making the analogy between Iraq and Darfur, because it seems to me, I mean, you have millions of Iraqi refugees, and the American media pretends like they don't even exist. I mean, and you have acts of genocide, like the U.S. Marines destroying the city of Fallujah in 2004. But apparently the American media doesn't consider these to be acts of genocide. And as an American, I have every right to point out when my military is doing something wrong. And I don't think it's a lack of patriotism. I think it's the ultimate act of patriotism to ask that the people representing us overseas do so in a way that reflects upon us positively. And what we're doing in Iraq, there's nothing positive about that.
Dr. Jennings?
I'm so very troubled about the situation over there, and come back again to the refugees that you just mentioned, and I agree with you. About 40 or 50,000 new refugees from Iraq are being made each month. And, the U.S. has admitted to the Immigration Service exactly 692 Iraqis since the war began. And you've had senators like Senator Kennedy and others complain about that, but it hasn't changed the administration's policy on it. Whatever happened to give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free? Every school child learns that in America. That's the ideal, but we're far from that ideal right now, and I appreciate the caller for his insight.
And Dr. Jennings, take a moment here to tell what our listeners can do through NGOs, non-governmental organizations, to try to help these refugees both inside and outside Iraq. We're responsible for them, and our government is not stepping up.
Well, I firmly believe that the wave of the future in the 21st century is non-governmental organizations, not only from the standpoint of the terrorists who are non-governmental organizations, but those who are helpers to help out in humanitarian crises who are non-governmental organizations. We've seen that over and over again increasingly over the last few years. And guess what? When I've been to every earthquake or tsunami disaster throughout that whole region over the last few years, and always the nations of the world come to compete for what? Visibility, prestige, and points mm-hmm. with the public, because you win or lose with hearts and minds, not by bombs and guns and missiles.
Indeed. Let me jump in here. Leif in Vancouver, you got a quick comment, Leif?
Yeah, this is Lee, not Leif.
Okay, Lee, go ahead. Got to be quick. I'm sorry.
Corny, you're very tired of hearing people talk about Bush as a blunderer. You know, the things that are being done in Iraq and the Middle East have, he has accomplished some things. One of the major things that he's accomplished is the consolidation of power into the executive branch of in America.
You are correct. And, Lee, I wish we had more time, but I'm up against the clock here. Thanks for calling in today. And Dr. James Jennings, ConscienceInternational.org. A pleasure to talk with you. Can we do it again?
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
I'll look forward to it. Thank you, sir.
Right.
Coming up next, a potential victim of the U.S. attorney cases, Carl Marlinga from Detroit, here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with crumbs stew. A side of couscous and a bite of ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
How do you enforce a law that millions routinely ignore? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. That's the problem, isn't it? Here we have a law that millions of people have simply decided to ignore. These people have all sorts of excuses. They tell themselves, it's a silly law. They tell themselves they're good people who just want to work. They tell themselves everybody else ignores it, why not me? And yes, they know that breaking the law puts them at the head of the line, ahead of people who have chosen to follow the law, but they feel that for them, there's no choice but to break it. I'm talking, of course, about the speed limit. Just about everyone who drove to work today broke the speed limit. They're good people who obeyed every other law, but they saw the posted speed limit and deliberately exceeded it. They don't consider themselves a threat to the nation's safety, and while there is always the fear of getting caught, it's not enough to slow them down. Okay, so suppose Congress came up with a speed limit reform bill that says, we're going to stop this charade right now. We're going to have patrol drones, cops every 200 yards, and if we catch you, we will send you straight home. But if you pay a fine of $5,000 and buy a new tamper-proof license for $1,500, pass a background check, and show you're a hard worker, we will let you continue to drive as you have been. I wonder what the reaction would be. Would commuters take the deal, or would they be ticked off? Would they say, thank you, government, for having mercy on me, a lawbreaker? Or would they say, what do you think we are, illegal immigrants? I guess we'll see.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging. And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955. Or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Hear ye! Hear ye! The Colts in session. The Colts in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge!
Unfortunately, I don't have a version of this song that says, here come the U.S. attorney.
Stop beating that bird. Cause here come the judge. Don't nobody bird. Cause here come the judge. Judge Shorty, he's presiding the state. And he don't take no stuff from nobody. No kind of way. Hey, boy, take off
Just last night, I was at dinner with a friend who identified himself as a Republican, and he said, so what's the big deal about this U.S. attorney scam, and why is all this attention being placed on whether Alberto Gonzalez came clean about the reasons that certain U.S. attorneys were selected for termination? And I said, well, you know, it's a very interesting case that undermines the confidence in that American people have in the U.S. Department of Justice and its independence from political power. And I explained to him my theories about how this whole thing evolved. And I believe that Alberto Gonzalez is defending presenting a line of defense in all of his amnesia and can't recall. And I don't know how those names got on the list. I think that this is to defend Karl Rove, and I could be wrong, but I think that when all of the laundry comes out, we're going to see that it was Karl Rove or someone under his direction who prepared these lists, now numbering somewhere in the 20s, of U.S. attorneys who were insufficiently loyal to the Bush administration, whether it was on the phony voter fraud issues or other matters that we might not yet know about. Well, here's a case that fascinates me, and I read about this in the New York Times a couple of weeks back. We go now to suburban Detroit, where Carl J. Marlinga joins us. He's a former county prosecutor who was also a candidate for Congress as a Democrat, and he was part of what we now believe was a massive effort to embarrass Democrats and use politically motivated investigations and or prosecutions to damage Democrats and their ability to win elections. Carl Marlinga, thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you. Now, really good to talk to you. Thanks.
Certainly. First of all, just a little background. What county near Detroit were you the prosecutor in?
In the county is Macomb County, which is just north of Detroit. It's a it used to be a Democratic stronghold, but in recent years it kind of tips one way or the other depending on the times. It was written up in the 80s as kind of the bellwether county for whether a Democrat or Republican administration would come to power, because it was so finely balanced. As a Democrat, I won re-election as the county prosecutor five times with very good vote totals in the 60% range. And so when I thought of finally stepping down from the prosecutor's office, I decided I would try my hand at a run for Congress in a district that included my county, but also a lot of rural areas up north. The Republicans really had a very substantial base in the district, and I realized at the start that it was really just kind of a noble run without any real chance of success. But it certainly was, I was certainly probably a better candidate for my party than a lot of others, and so it did get some attention. I lost, and I thought that was to be expected, and I figured, well, that was kind of a interesting and almost noble way to end my career in politics. And then the nightmare happened after that. I was investigated and eventually indicted on a bribery charge. It still hurts me to get out that word, because if there's one crime that I think I've hated more than any in my tenure as prosecutor, it's anything having to do with bribes or any type of corruption in government. But I found myself the target and actually being accused, and I thought it was just a bad dream, and I would wake up from it and it would all go away because somebody would finally say, oh, look, we've talked to enough witnesses. We understand that there's no truth in this. And the thing just persisted, and even until the day of indictment, I lived in this fool's type of paradise where I just thought that the U.S. Attorney's Office, where I had also served years ago, is a good office, and they'll do the complete investigation, and I will be exonerated, but that didn't come. Finally, I did get exonerated. I was found not guilty at trial, and afterwards, the exoneration was so complete, the jurors on the case, four of them got together and asked if my wife and I would join them for dinner because they just really wanted to apologize for me for what they saw to be just a terribly unjust effort to have me brought before the bar of justice for something that I was obviously innocent of. And so the whole episode I chalked up as just to just one of those awful sets of coincidences. I know as a prosecutor over 20 years and then as an assistant U.S. attorney prior to that, that occasionally prosecutors make mistakes for innocent reasons. I mean, I knew that as county prosecutor there had to be probably one or more a year out of the 10,000 cases, and perhaps even more, in which innocent people were prosecuted. But I just, you know, I just never thought that anything would be done for improper motives.
Now you mentioned that before you were an elected county prosecutor, that you served as an assistant U.S. attorney. Would that be in the Detroit office?
In the Detroit office, the very same office that I found myself being accused by.
And what era was that? Who was president? What party was making
it? It was in the Carter era at the end of it. I held over for a couple of years in the Reagan administration. We had a change of U.S. attorneys. But in those days, the U.S. attorney's office was thoroughly non-political in any sense, and that it really didn't matter to us line assistant U.S. attorneys who was president. We were there to serve the country and do justice, and that was part of the pride of being with the Justice Department, that you always knew that things were run clean and right for the right reasons.
So with your background, having worked in the office that later was politicized and led this phony indictment and trial against you, then you were an elected county prosecutor,
right.
You must have had a very strong sense that the Justice Department actually does operate in a just way, and it must be a mind-bender, and I would use stronger language, but the FCC might fine me, but a real twist of your mind to become a subject of an investigation that you knew was baseless, and ultimately that was proven. I'm very pleased to know that. But this had to have a deep impact on your confidence and your sense of your whole career.
Oh, it was tough because, I mean, I gave my career to prosecuting bad guys and to believing that prosecutors everywhere do things for the right reasons, and my wife particularly was just amazed and somewhat upset at the way that I would defend the office. I kept on saying, look at these guys are trying to find the truth. If we give them enough time, they'll discover it. Don't worry, before trial we'll get the call with an apology. And I kept on assuring her that, look, it's going to be all right. The office would not work in an improper way. And it just dragged on. And finally, you know, I had to admit to her that I don't know what went wrong. But then I still tried to chalk it up to just bad judgment, coincidence, sloppy investigation. But now, in the aftermath, looking at all of the political influence that the Bush Justice Department has had in it, I can see that probably what happened is that what I just kept on thinking was just kind of mistakes in judgment. There was probably some underlying message or the knowledge that maintaining a prosecution against a high-profile person of the opposite party was going to get you points somehow in Washington. But even more to the point that even if you somehow lost faith in the prosecution, you did not dare drop it. And I think that that's probably the real crime in this.
Carl Marlinga, I'm just reminded of just one recent example, the Duke lacrosse team and the rape charges that were pressed against them by an opportunistic prosecutor who was up for re-election. The way the media played that, the way that Greta Van Susteren and Nancy Grace essentially conducted trials on television and convicted them before there was any real evidence presented, and that ultimately when the team members were exonerated, the coverage of that was maybe at 1% of the exploitive, sensational tabloid coverage that in the minds of many Americans seared in their guilt. So tell me about how the Detroit Free Press and the television stations in Detroit played your charges, your prosecution, and did they give equal coverage to your exoneration?
They actually did. I mean, I think a part of it is that everywhere in the media, people who had known me as a prosecutor for 20 years understood that I was a Boy Scout. I mean, I was one of the straightest guys ever involved in the prosecutor's office. I always had this ideal that prosecutors are there to do justice no matter what the consequences, that we're out there to convict the guilty, but at the same time we're there to try to identify and free the innocent. And I had a whole career of doing controversial things where I would do things against the grain because I believe that that's where the justice would lie. And so I had reporters calling me all the time saying, Carl, I just don't believe this, and they wanted things off the record. And I said, no, my attorneys have finally convinced me that, you know, we just have to wait this out. But I had strong expressions of support, and the papers were fairly balanced as we were coming up to the trial. Every once in a while, I would smart at just the thought. But I realized it wasn't them. After all, I was being accused of terrible, terrible things, and so they had to simply factually report what the charges were. But after the exoneration, after the verdict came back, I was front page news in both papers. The three major TV stations around here had me on interviews even a couple of days afterwards. When the jury members wanted to meet with me to express their sadness and condolences for what I went through, that became a front page story as well. So I did have some measure of vindication, but so many times, in fact, when I was a prosecutor, I told my assistants that, look, when you arrest somebody, this becomes first page news. Months later, if you've made a mistake, it's going to appear on 27D, and nobody's ever going to know about it. So before you make that decision to go forward, you better be darn sure, because lives and reputation are on the line over here, and we never get to make up for a mistake. And but thankfully, in my case, it was a little bit different.
And what did it cost you, Carl? How much did you have to pay in legal fees to defend your innocence?
Well, I've made an agreement with my attorneys, who are some of the classiest guys, that I would never reveal how cheap it was that they in terms of the charges. But it was still in the tens of thousands of dollars, and I still have an agreement with them on just kind of a moral basis that as I recover and get better and better in private practice and make whatever money I can, that I will still see them through the end. The defense was truly worth about $150,000. I haven't paid that much, but eventually I hope to.
We'll talk more as we continue. Our guest is Carl J. Marlinga. As he just told you, he served as an assistant U.S. attorney in the office that later prosecuted him on phony charges, and he was an elected county prosecutor in Macomb County, Michigan, for many years. This is amazing. We'll talk more and broaden out to the Gonzalez issues and the other U.S. attorneys in the next segment. If you have a question or comment, call me now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B. Collins.
A radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid Karma Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The Retirement Specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Actual rider was down in the middle lane of San Francisco Parlor. Just a little bit here. San Francisco. A Golden Gate Bridge at the speed limit at this point, which is good news. And here in San Francisco, we're under partly cloudy conditions. It's 57 degrees from Sirius. Stay tuned for your latest weather forecast. Hey, let's take a look at traffic. We're going to tell you about a problem just being reported. CHP telling us about a situation in Santa Cruz Mountains. Northbound 17 after Bear Creek Road, it's a vehicle on fire, and the fire department is on scene. Looks like they actually have the fire out at this point. Meanwhile, in Morgan Hill, it is Bernard at Deer Hill. We have a crash there.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is Carl J. Marlinga. As we told you in the preceding segment, he's got a powerful story about a misguided prosecution by the U.S. attorney in Detroit, a Republican appointee of the Bush administration. And while his trial ended in a clear declaration of innocence, he had to go through an incredible process. And Carl Marlinga, I've spent a long time as an advocate for convicted individuals who are innocent of the crime that they were sent to jail for. And one of the things that I've found is that when people are truly innocent of a crime, they underestimate the risk that they face in being charged and going to trial because they have this incredible belief in their innocence and a trust in the criminal justice system. And often they underdefend themselves or they don't, you know, pull out all the stops. They get lousy attorneys. Now, you were well-placed, well-connected, and what you've told us, you were well-represented. But was there a point where you had to kick yourself and say, wow, I've got to play hardball here?
Well, yeah, but actually that came so late. As a matter of fact, I'm a good example of what you just said because I wrote to the U.S. Attorney's Office saying that I want to testify in the grand jury. I wanted to come down, and I made four separate appearances without counsel. I was a well-known attorney in the Detroit area, and, of course, the first rule of criminal defense is that you never, ever testify in front of a grand jury. It can't help you. They're only out there to hurt you. And if you testify long enough, they'll eventually be able to build up some perjury charge and mountains of statements. Something has to be inconsistent eventually. Although that did not happen in my case because, again, I was, you know, so absolutely innocent that there was nothing that I could ever trip myself up on. But I did find that the trips to the grand jury really didn't help because I never knew what I was fighting against. In fact, when the indictment came down, I was just amazed that they were looking at some things that I did not have a ghost of an idea. So really, you can't prepare. In fact, guilty people do have a much better chance because at least they know what the heck they've done.
You know? Yeah.
And so they can guard against it. But if you're really, truly innocent, you do go in underprepared. You have this blind faith that things are going to come out okay. And people kept on telling me that, says, you know, Carl, this is serious. These guys are after you. And I would say, no, look, they're fair-minded people. They'll come to the right decision. All I got to do is raise my hand, take the oath, and tell them what happened, and I can point them to, you know, to different ways that they can find out things, and it'll be clear. And as a matter of fact, I took a polygraph test, and two of the other people under investigation also took polygraph tests, and all three passed. And if you know anything about polygraph tests, although they're not admissible in court, they have a high probability of being accurate in just kind of the common everyday sense, say 85 or 90%. But mathematically, if you have three people who are supposedly connected in a conspiracy and all three take and pass a polygraph test, the statistical odds against that being incorrect are just phenomenal.
And Carl, I'm sorry to jump in, but I need to move along because of time. I want to know who was responsible for this phony prosecution.
Well, of course, I'll never know. I'll never know. I know that the Republican Party state chair in Michigan made the initial request for an investigation. There was a couple of changes of U.S. attorneys. The person who prosecuted my case, Mr. Tuckle, there was a time when he went to Washington and was looking at a higher appointment, and he came back specifically, I'm told, to do the prosecution in my case. But I still have a high regard for him after all of this time. I just think that there was some decision-making center in Washington which simply said that if we got a Democrat on the ropes, we're not letting him go.
And you're one of 21 in Michigan who have been focused on 21 Democrats since 2001. Now, let me ask you to zoom out here and talk about your view of Alberto Gonzalez, his testimony, which I think has amounted to lying under oath to several sessions of Congress. Do you think he is fit to serve as the Attorney General?
No, I don't. I don't. I mean, in this business, in the prosecution business, you got to be squeaky clean. You have to do everything for the right reasons. You can't even allow yourself to be tempted, not even a little bit. And to do anything for a political reason is just anathema to the whole purpose of serving in the justice system.
One of my callers yesterday said it appeared to him that the Justice Department became an extension of Karl Rove's political operation.
Well, you know, it happened in the Nixon administration. You had the Attorney General, John Mitchell, was the biggest political operative and the biggest lawbreaker that there was. So there's precedent for it. It seems that there's just kind of an intoxication of power that that happens sometimes in Washington. And if it happens in the Justice Department, it's really, really bad. And I think that we have people who can keep on telling themselves that there are innocent explanations and good reasons for what they are doing, but the overall political stench of what happens in that department is just overwhelming.
And do you worry about the U.S. attorneys who kept their jobs and what they delivered to do so?
Well, I don't think that they delivered necessarily. I think that they were just probably less vocal in expressing their outrage. That sometimes just lying low, it's an act of political cowardice. But a lot of people do it, and I think that probably that was the way to keep your job.
Well, I think you're being a little generous there, but I'll defer to you because you're in your shoes and you've been through that process. What do you think it's going to take to clean up the Justice Department?
Well, I mean, first of all, I got to say that there are that the U.S. attorneys who did stand up are Republicans, and that there are plenty of Republicans, career U.S. attorneys or people in the Justice Department who could be the ones to clean it up. I just think that you have to get the people loyal to Karl Rove and to get the political operatives outside of it. And I think that George Bush, in maybe a rare act of courage, just has to clean out that Justice Department before he leaves. Ultimately, I think we need a change of administration. And I don't really care if it's Democrat or Republican. I mean, I care it's a Democrat. I hope it's one of us. But I just think that we need a new set of people. These people don't know how to use power. They don't belong in power. And the country will be far better off. It'll be cleaner, better place once they're out of power.
Carl J. Marlinga, it's a pleasure to talk with you. I'm glad you survived this episode. And I appreciate you sharing your story with us today.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. You can get our live stream weekdays and archive programs 24/7 at peterbcollins.com. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Brian Urban.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, and we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. President Bush vetoed the last war funding bill that reached his desk. To avoid a repeat of that, he and congressional leaders have to compromise. But as CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports, that didn't happen today.
The first effort at negotiating a new Iraq funding bill was a complete bust. Democrats say they offered concessions, but the only answer they got was no. White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolton says he did reject an offer to let President Bush waive troop withdrawal deadlines, saying they can't be in there at all.
Whether waivable or not, timelines send exactly the wrong signal to our adversaries, to our allies, and most importantly, to the troops in the field.
Democratic leaders say they will still get a bill to fund the war passed by Memorial Day, whether President Bush wants to sign it or not. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Five more American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, three of them in Diyala province, where the U.S. commander recently asked for reinforcements. CBS News military consultant Mike Lyon says this shows how much they're needed.
Until we realign forces, move them there, we'll continue to be, you know, a stalemate at best because the enemy really continues to have the upper hand.
FEMA knew more than a year ago about formaldehyde fumes in the trailers housing Katrina victims on the Gulf Coast. CBS News investigative correspondent Armin Katayan, who broke the story, has learned that FEMA's own tests frequently found levels of the cancer-causing chemical much higher than the government's own standard for workplace exposure.
We talked to FEMA today, and they described the internal document that we had obtained as a worst-case scenario, and then they said that we were, quote-unquote, misinterpreting the data. But we also discovered, since our report first aired, that the chief medical officer from Homeland Security has begun looking into the matter.
Formaldehyde is being blamed for the respiratory problems suffered by some children in the trailers. Democratic senators are trying to keep the heat on Alberto Gonzalez.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House, which ridicules the move by Senate Democrats for a vote of no confidence in the Attorney General. Spokesman Tony Fratto dismisses such an effort as just another political stunt. He says the president still regards Gonzalez as a very strong AG and continues to support him. He says Gonzalez has been honest and forthright in addressing allegations of misconduct in the firing of those U.S. attorneys.
Paul Wolfowitz, who agreed yesterday to step down as president of the World Bank, spoke publicly today thanking people for their support.
I am grateful. I've gotten a lot of very gracious comments, notes, emails from staff. I'm grateful for that.
Some staff members complained that Wolfowitz had undermined the mission of the World Bank with his heavy-handed management style and his involvement in arranging a promotion and raise for his girlfriend, a bank employee. A big finish to the week on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 79 points to close at a new record, 13,556. The Nasdaq up 19 points today. This is CBS News.
You know when you open a birthday card from Grandma? She's usually good for, what, like $5? Well, now imagine that you have 100 grandmas. It feels like that.
Have you ever gotten out of your car and something catches your eye on the ground? You walk over and find a $5 bill? Okay, now pretend you find a $495 bill next to it. It's just like that.
New GEICO customers report average annual savings of $500 on their car insurance. Discover how it feels and how much you could save. Go to GEICO.com. Simple as that.
From the crack of dawn to late at night, cops are on the lookout for seatbelt violations. It doesn't matter when or where you drive, wear a seatbelt or you will get a ticket. Cops are cracking down like never before, so remember, always buckle up or you will get caught, day and night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Parents, as much as you might like to, you can't go along with your kids on prom night. Or can you? CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has the story.
Big prom weekend coming up. Now parents have a new way to remind their kids not to drink. Go to the website prmtxt.org. Type in some information and the liquor industry-sponsored Century Council will text your teen telling them, have fun, stay safe, don't drink. Love you.
That message will be delivered anywhere in the United States on the date that's given at 8:30 in the evening, when we believe that any teen who gets a text message is going to reach for their phone to find out what it is.
Council President Ralph Blackman. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Has Clarence Thomas lost his voice? The Supreme Court Justice only rarely asks questions during oral argument, but this is quiet even for him. This term, Thomas hasn't uttered a single word during 68 hours of arguments. The last time he said anything was February of last year. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Aflac for small business.
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an amoeba.
An amoeba?
Uh-oh, got a split.
Oh, bye.
No, I got a split in half. You know, us amoebas always growing.
Well, with Aflac for small business, you get a lot of the benefits of a big business at no direct cost to you while you're still growing.
Great, because here I go. Much better.
Well, you can both visit AflacSB.com or call 1-800-99-AFLAC. American Family Life Insurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by four trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
Live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lively, informative, compelling, progressive talk radio. And it's interactive, too, which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls. Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B.'s America.
Do it.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show at 6 minutes past. And as usual in this hour, we'll bring you Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, our leader in election protection and election integrity in this country. But Brad will be joining us in just a few minutes because we are able to join right now Congressman Peter DeFazio, the Democrat from Oregon, who represents some of our listeners in Coos Bay. Congressman, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter, that's what we call the other Bay Area.
Well, it's a beautiful area. We got a lot of great listeners there, and I'm glad you
certainly could. Is. A lot fewer people, which I like.
I'm glad you could join us today, and I'll just take this opportunity to announce that starting next week, this program will also be heard in Portland on KPOJ 620, which is one of the leading progressive talk stations in the country, and we're very excited about that. But, Congressman, I called you today to talk about a very disappointing outcome to a resolution that you offered in the House this week related to something that we have been following for over a year, and that is the desire of the Bush administration, in many respects, to confront Iran in a military manner. And we've been very concerned about the buildup in the Gulf, about the ratcheting up of tensions, and even the recent threats from the deck of an aircraft carrier issued by Vice President Cheney. And you proposed legislation that specifically would have prevented the White House from launching an attack without approval from the Congress. And I think this is a very important and a quite valid measure to offer. And unfortunately, it lost by a vote of 136 to 288, meaning that many Democrats voted against this.
Yeah, it was pathetic. I restated the powers given to Congress under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution as prescribed by the War Powers Act. And it's very pathetic when a large majority of the Congress, votes against their lawful obligations regarding the making of war. I mean, I'm very concerned about the potential for yet another rash and preemptive attack by the Bush administration against the non-existent, as of today, nuclear capabilities of Iran. It would be disastrous for the region. We had an incredible presentation at our Democratic caucus or conference around the beginning of February from retired Major General Hoare, who was the CENTCOM commander in that region, a Marine. And he said, and he was saying, you know, there are those of us, retired military, are really worried. These people are determined to go ahead and attack, despite the fact it won't work. They wouldn't be able to eradicate their potential to develop nuclear weapons. It would make them determined to develop them. It would kill massive amounts of civilians, turn the populace against us, who is actually pro-U.S., and probably cause attacks against our troops in Iraq and other incredible problems of potentially interdict oil. And he said, you know, the Bush administration is pushing this, that the Marines and the Army is saying you're nuts, because they say the only way you could do this, if you really want to take out their capability, is to invade, and we have no capability to do that. And the Air Force and the Navy are saying, oh, yeah, maybe we could do that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah,
now
that's a huge concern. Although apparently Admiral Fallon stood up to the White House on this when Bush wanted to put or Cheney, who's ever in charge down there, wanted to put a third aircraft carrier in the Gulf, and he said no.
Well, sir, you just mentioned Admiral Fallon, and that was going to be my next point, that when he was appointed, critics said, well, this appears to be putting a Navy man into the top ranks of commanders overseeing the occupation in Iraq. You know, there are no naval issues to speak of related to Iraq, that this appeared to be setting the stage for an expansion of our military operations to include some sort of assault on Iran.
Yeah, no, there were a number of us who had that concern, but it was just revealed in the press this week that apparently the Bush administration tried to pressure him into deploying a third carrier group into the Gulf, which would barely fit without running into the other ships in the Gulf, and he said no. So maybe we underestimated him. I mean, there was a lot of skepticism at the Pentagon about the adventurism of Mr. Cheney and Mr. Bush here, and maybe there is, maybe he's not going to be a patsy for them on this.
Well, Mr. DeFazio, I just want to tell you that I really appreciate your effort. I really want to underscore that when Democrats stand for important principles, even when the vote goes against you, that it's an important statement. It's a sign of leadership, and you're operating from a constitutional basis that I have great admiration for. I'd like to take us back just a few weeks to the stripping out of a similar provision that was in the Democratic package, the supplemental, it was removed, and critics have said that this occurred after the leadership made trips over to speak to the AIPAC conference that was in Washington at about that same time. In your view, are those issues linked?
You know, I don't know what happened there. I do know I read press accounts that the speaker was booed at AIPAC when she brought up the issue of Iran and concerns about that. And whether that was a linkage, that's something that's pretty opaque to me and slightly above my pay grade. A number of us were very angry about that and said we wanted another opportunity to have a vote specifically on the Iran issue, and I got to admit the speaker did deliver on that promise in pretty short order. Unfortunately, the result was discouraging. I mean, I just can't believe that there's only 138 members of the House, a few Republicans and a large number of Democrats, willing to stand up for the Constitution and the lawful division of powers. I mean, this administration's scary. I have a letter that before they came to Congress for authority for the first war, I had written to the White House and saying, you can't have a war without coming to Congress. At that point, I get a letter back from Gonzalez saying, oh, no, the inherent powers of the commander-in-chief are such that he has total control and can do whatever he wants with the military of the United States. That's a little inelegant in terms of his prose, but that's essentially the conclusion of it. I'd be happy to provide you a copy of it. But it's extraordinary and, of course, defies all interpretations of the Constitution. And, so these are scary folks.
Yes, indeed. So let me turn then to the vote in the Senate this week. Again, a principled vote. 19 Democrats voted with Republicans to defeat the measure offered by Senator the Wisconsin
Feingold. Russ
Feingold. Thank you, Russ yes. Feingold. And while it was defeated, again, I believe it's an important statement for Democrats to make, and that it will, in time, bring more support. We did see the four major senators who want to be president all vote for that, and in a couple of cases, that's a very important step forward. But what is your sense of the gamesmanship here, and how do we get to where we want to be, which is a date certain to bring U.S. troops home from Iraq?
Well, we did a little better in the House, I think. I don't know, maybe percentage-wise. We got 171 votes on very similar language in the House last week, which was a big vote. And, you know, that means we need 29 plus 18. I think that figures out to 47 more votes. That certainly gives people who are concerned a target list. Take that target list of the, you know, other than the 171, and just bear down on them and
it's
find us 49
long.
More votes. Because I'm
here's
concerned
how
that
long.
A number of us
Westwood
pushed
won.
For that
you
vote and got
the
it
three without
speaker with her consent, and she supported it. I said every time we vote on any money for this war, we have to have the same vote to set a date certain for withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to do that.
Congressman DeFazio, you say DeFazio, right?
DeFazio.
He's with us here from
sure.
Oregon on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let me ask you about one more issue, and then I know your time is valuable, and I appreciate you joining us.
Right.
You referenced Alberto Gonzalez and the letter that he wrote to you straining straining our interpretation of presidential power. Given all the issues that have surfaced and the testimony of James Comey this week before the Senate committee, why aren't we attempting to impeach Alberto Gonzalez? I understand the no-confidence vote is a is a first step in that direction, and I'll be patient for a minute about that. But, you know, it's just very clear that this man not only doesn't have confidence, but that he has brazenly lied under oath to congressional committees. And, the end game of impeachment may not be reached, but as you know, if a bill were introduced, it would put additional pressure on Gonzalez and on Bush to deal with the problem. And I don't understand why Democrats are holding back.
Well, I don't either. I mean, he was not qualified to be attorney general in the first place, and more people should have stood up to that. I mean, particularly given, the things I had from him when he was White House counsel in terms of his radical misinterpretation of the Constitution of the United States and the division of powers. You know, he's a political hack is what he is.
Well,
what
and there's certainly,
you know, George Bush. And
there's
so, you know, whatever, you know, I would be happy to, you know, try and remove him. I think the hope is that that vote will get him removed without having to get bogged down in a vote, you know, in a impeachment process, because we're already bogged down in the war process trying to stop the war, which is impeding us from dealing with a number of domestic issues we want to take up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sure appreciate your point of view here, and if I can offer you any encouragement, I just believe that we can't turn a blind eye to these issues, that you have the constitutional authority to fully investigate and bring impeachment charges if there is sufficient evidence. I believe that just on the face of it, there's plenty of evidence, and it's not limited to the U.S. attorney issues. The NSA spying, the torture.
Oh, yeah, all that stuff about Ashcroft this week, that was incredible. I mean, even John Ashcroft wouldn't sign off on the illegal spying. Now, that's a new low.
Yes, it certainly is.
They had to bully Ashcroft. They must have really been out there.
Well, Congressman, thanks for your time today, and I'd love to talk to you again in the future.
I'd love to do it. Thanks, Peter.
Peter DeFazio, Democrat from Oregon, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up next, Brad Friedman joins us, and we'll talk election issues and voting machines and all kinds of things in the news. Florida, Texas, California, Missouri, and maybe a little time for that blonde bimbo, Ann Coulter. It's all ahead right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wine, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffeehouse in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
TGIF, everybody, happy Friday, and let's take a look at our problem in Chular, northbound 101. Before Chular, we have a grass fire. Now, it's burning on the right shoulder. The fire department should be on scene there. Last report, they were en route. I also want to mention that we do have a big deal at Laguna Seca Raceway. It's the expect delays on Highway 68 and other routes to and from the raceway today through Sunday, as of course Laguna Seca hosts the U.S. Sports Car Invitational. That should be a great time. Statewide, don't forget that CHP is going to be out in force, meaning that if you don't buckle up, you'll get a click it or ticket. So remember to buckle up, folks. The men's store, JCPenney, through Monday, buy one, get one for all 99 cents on all PGA golf shirts and shorts. JCPenney, every day matters.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host.
As I was walking,
Peter B.
Opening up highway, I saw above me, under the skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.
We've got a great team producing the Peter B. Collins Show. Katrina Rill is an excellent producer and never stops. Got us Congressman DeFazio today, and very powerful comments from him. I'm very glad he was able to join us. Also, a tip of the hat to Brian Urban, who is at the controls today and doing very well. He hasn't driven onto the sidewalk yet. And Brad Friedman is standing by here. Thanks for holding, Brad, so that we could talk to Congressman DeFazio today.
Not a problem. No problem at all. How you doing?
Not too bad. And I'll take this opportunity to mention that the reason Brian's at the controls is he's getting up to speed, because I'm going to be away at the end of next week and a day past the Memorial Day holiday, so I can go to my stepson's graduation. And Tony Trupiano, our buddy from Detroit,
is going to be sitting in, so you'll be talking with him next Friday, Brad.
I look forward to it, and glad that he's back on the air, by the way. And
yes,
I'm also with him on Tuesdays, I might add.
Okay, and tell us the time so people can go to radiopower.org and hear it.
Yes, sir, 11 a.m. Pacific time. What is that, 2 p.m. Eastern time,
mm-hmm.
every Tuesday with our old friend Tony T. Glad he's back.
Yeah, indeed. And we had a powerful interview just last hour with a gentleman from Detroit who ran afoul of the U.S. attorney there. And it's a powerful story, Brad. His name is Carl Marlinga. He was actually a U.S., an assistant U.S. attorney back in the 1970s. So he worked in the office that later prosecuted him on phony charges, and he was completely exonerated, but it ruined his political career. And he was one of 21 Democrats fingered by that office in Michigan in the last 5 years alone. So it's just another example of the wayward politicization of the Justice Department under President Karl Rove.
President Karl Rove. Very good. It really is. It's incredible. I know we ended last week sort of talking about the latest beat in the Ann Coulter voter fraud scam, where she actually committed voter fraud. But one of the points that came out of there was this FBI guy who comes out and actually names a Brad Blog guest blogger as a stalker, puts his name on the record. This is, the FBI under that same Justice Department. It's unbelievable. By the way, I should add, there is no such evidence, no charges have ever been brought in any such case. And, it's unbelievable what they are willing to do. And, boy, I'll tell you, that testimony this week from James Comey really shows the depths to which they are willing to sink. I mean, you have to remember when Bush sends out his henchmen in the middle of the night to go to the hospital bed of John Ashcroft to get him to sign on to something that the Justice Department felt was illegal and unconstitutional, he's going out there to strong-arm John Ashcroft. These guys are serious Republicans.
Yeah.
Right-wingers, they weren't, evil enough for the Bush administration. So this isn't a matter of, Republicans versus Democrats. I mean, some of the most hardcore right-wingers were not hardcore and right-wing enough, apparently, for this administration.
Well, and you're echoing the comments of Congressman DeFazio. It is just stunning. And our friend Tom Hartman made the comment today that this is Watergate on steroids. And yet the Comey testimony has not appeared on CBS or ABC since it occurred on, I think it was Wednesday.
Mm.
And also, it was stunning to me because there was an exchange at the news conference as Bush and Blair were just slobbering all over each other in the Rose Garden yesterday. And Kelly O'Donnell asked the question about, did the president order Gonzalez to go to the hospital to try to force Ashcroft to sign off on this illegal program? And he dodged the question with just a boilerplate answer about how I'm not going to go into it, and I'll just tell you that the program is important and it protects the American people. And he got away with that, and not only, from what I can tell, she didn't follow up. I haven't seen the full news conference, but on the PBS NewsHour last night, they gave us a 10-minute segment of that news conference and didn't bother to present this very embarrassing moment of the president trying to dodge that bullet.
Well, I should say that Kelly O'Donnell actually did follow it up in the clip that I saw, to her credit, to the rest of the media there, who apparently didn't think it was notable enough to ask, to follow up what Kelly had asked. That is certainly to their shame. And, what PBS did is what the media has been doing now for, at least 6 years, is essentially allowing the White House to set their news agenda. The White House says this is a press conference about Tony Blair, resigning, and so that's what their report is going to be about. And that's why, for years at bradblog.com, I've been saying, we got your news agenda right here. I'm not letting the White House, I'm not letting Congress, I don't care Republican or Democrat, I'm not going to let any of those guys set my news agenda. I'm going to report what it is that I think needs to be reported on, the American people need to know about, and frankly, I wish the rest of the media still did that. They're getting moderately better, but not a whole hell of a lot.
You're right, Brad. Time for a break, and we'll continue in just a moment. We're going to check out the situation in Missouri. That's also related to the U.S. attorney scandal. and a lot of other issues, too, including a worm in Sarasota, Diebold in Texas, and ESNS in San Francisco. Plus, Chris from Salinas, give us a call. I got your facts, and I want to talk about it.
KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, be the path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention, whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
A worm in Sarasota?
Woody Guthrie said this land was made for you and
Congressional District 13 is the scene of a contested election, the one that the House Administration Committee agreed to review further. And Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com broke a big story this week that was also published by Computer World. You can find it on BradBlog.com. And first up, Brad, tell us about the SQL slammer worm and what it can do.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty amazing story. On the first day of early voting in Sarasota, where that 13th congressional district election, a contested election, is, the SQL slammer worm hit the county database system and took down the entire network for about 2 hours. It breached the firewall. It changed administrative passwords. It started sending out all kinds of messages, essentially, to other IP addresses on the internet, and took down the entire, really the entire voting system for 2 hours as polling places were unable to verify a voter residence, essentially, on the county database systems. Now, what I find most interesting about this is that the information was not really disclosed. For the most part, the county, Kathy Dent, the election supervisor down there, is required by law to put out a conduct of elections report not long after the elections, and I've got email that shows that she knew about this slammer worm having slammed into Sarasota, but she did not mention anything about it on her conduct of election report. And well, it's quite a story. Read it for yourself. But the damage that was done, ultimately, we don't know if there was any more damage done above and beyond those 2 hours when the system went down. I spoke with one of the security folks who works on that system down there, and he says it's a possibility that something worse could be done, because in fact this is exactly how hackers work. They'll often attack a system in one way to sort of probe it and discover the vulnerabilities, and use one attack to mask another. So we can't really know for sure, and it's therefore a bit unconscionable, if you ask me, that this information was not really widely disclosed. So the scientists who looked at that election and the plaintiffs who are challenging the election could at least look into it and see what full damage it might have had.
This is amazing. And Brad, this is the first I've learned of this. You broke this story. Nobody else had it before, right?
That's correct.
And
I broke the story. I got I had a tipster who shared a document with me, which was the incident report that was actually filed on the incident took place October 23rd, Monday, October 23rd, 2006, the first day of early voting. The incident report was filed October 24th, the next day, and the email that I have shows that it was then sent to the election administrator, Kathy Dent, 2 days after the election, November 9, 2006, and yet it's never been reported until I bothered to do so.
And you've got the incident report right up there at Brad Blog. Let me just read the executive summary. It's brief. An internet service outage lasting approximately 2 hours occurred from 12:55 to 2:46 p.m. on Monday, 10/23/06, caused by an unpatched database server that was compromised by a variant of the SQL slammer worm. Once this server was infected, it sent traffic to other database servers on the internet, and the traffic generated by the infected server rendered the firewall unavailable. So what we have here is at least circumstantial evidence that the systems in Florida District 13 were compromised at least on the first day of voting, and if it could have occurred then, and if it was not reported by Registrar Kathy Dent or whatever her title is, then
they haven't fully investigated these issues, and it really appears that this election cannot be considered credible.
Well, it certainly raises questions. Let me point out a couple, one or two caveats here. There are two, at least this is what I'm told by the folks down in Sarasota, that we're dealing essentially with two different networks. One is the voting network of the election supervisor's office, where the votes themselves are stored. The other is the county database system, where information on registration and residence and so forth, where that information is. Now, when you go to vote in Florida, then, what they do is, to verify your residency, they check into this county database network. That was the one that was taken down. Now, the security guy I spoke with says that they don't share any copper or any wires between the two networks. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But to me, the bigger question is, why the hell was this not more fully disclosed? And we've seen this now again and again, where these documents have been dribbling out. There was a bug warning by the voting machine company, ES&S, which was ignored by the election supervisor down there. That came out long after the election. The stipulations that the company, ES&S, had given to the state of Florida before they would allow them to look at the source code after the election, an incredible document. I ran that at bradblog.com. That was not given over to the plaintiff. So this all is a matter of, you know, disclosure and sunshine in the sunshine state, if you will. That it just, you know, seems to say, even if they, again, giving them the benefit of the doubt, even if nothing went wrong and even if they weren't lying or covering up anything, boy, it sure begins to look like it, doesn't it?
But, Brad, even in just this almost two-hour period, some people were unable to vote, right? Or if they did vote,
yep,
we cannot rely that their votes were accurately tabulated.
Well, that's right. The election was decided by just 369 votes. You had 18,000 votes that we know disappeared into the ether, and nobody knows what happened with those. But yeah, even those 369 votes, no telling how many people were not able to wait around and cast their vote that day when the entire countywide system went out. I think it was seven or eight different early polling places, as I recall. They were all unavailable for those 2 hours, and that clearly that could have made the difference when you're dealing with a race that comes down to 369 votes.
Okay, so now we have another case here that Brad Blog has an exclusive. You bring it to Computer World, and I have not seen this in the New York Times. I haven't seen it in the San Francisco Chronicle. Those are the two papers I inhale, you know, cover to cover every day, and I have seen no reporting in the so-called mainstream media.
Well, there was a little bit, and to the credit of a couple of the papers down there in Sarasota, at least, the Bradenton Herald covered it, advanced the story just a little bit, got some additional comments from Christine Jennings. The election supervisor, Kathy Dent, of course, would not speak to them either. So there was two or three papers. There was coverage, of course, in the U.K. They picked up the story at the Register in UK, but nope, nothing in the New York Times, nothing in the Washington Post. I guess it's not that important.
Well, there's no blood, there's no guts, there's no sex, no dead bodies.
That's right.
Why would they care?
Exactly right.
Well, that's a story related to ES&S, and if time permits, we'll come back to ES&S related to the scanners in San Francisco.
And actually, before you do, let me just drop one more point.
Go ahead.
I actually ended up running that over at Computer World. I need to sort of thank Greg Pallast for that.
Oh.
Greg called me the night before I was getting ready to break it the next morning, and he said, "Hey, Brad, I got an exclusive for you if you want it." I said, "Well, I've already got this other story I'm going to run. Can yours wait?" He said, "No, it's got to go now." And it's a story he interviewed David Iglesias,
mm-hmm,
the fired U.S. attorney out of New Mexico, and had some interesting thoughts on that he and suggests that Iglesias is essentially working towards an obstruction of justice case against Karl Rove. We've got some material evidence from Monica Goodling,
mm-hmm,
discussing letting Iglesias go because he was an absentee landlord, having been an active naval officer and having to go serve time. And, of course, if they let him go and use that reason, that would be obstruction of justice. So quick note there. Interesting Greg Palast exclusive. If you scroll down a few articles at Bradblog, because his story ran at Bradblog that morning. I called my editor at Computer World, and I said, hey, you guys want it? And they said, you bet we do. And so we got it on over to Computer World, which got at least some fresh eyeballs on it, I suppose.
Yeah, good. Well, Chris joins us from Salinas, one of our election protection activists, and he sent me a fax earlier today. Chris, welcome.
How you doing?
Thanks for your vigilance. I just want to read this to you, Brad. This is from an application for ballot. And, Chris, this, and also there's an application for touchscreen. And, Chris, before I read this paper ballot advisory, the application for ballot, is this something that you would pick up at a polling place when you say, I don't want to use a machine? Or
I went down to drop my absentees off today, and I asked some questions. And when apparently in early voting, you have to fill out these applications before you can vote, an application for either the touchscreen voting machine or if you want a paper ballot. And I can't get a real explanation from the registrar because he hasn't returned my call.
All right. And if you select the application for a paper ballot, for a ballot, you receive a document called a paper ballot advisory. And it cites HAVA, Brad. The applicable code is HAVACAC 2100. State and federal law require a warning to voters that by choosing to cast a paper ballot, you are at risk of of over or under voting. And then it defines what an overvote is and an undervote is, and we won't go into those details because I think most people understand. And then it says, if you incorrectly mark or mutilate the ballot, you may request a new ballot from the election official. Now, have you ever seen an advisory like this, Brad?
I have not. What section was that? Section?
HAVA, CAC 20100.
20100.
Mm-hmm. And then it's this is duplicated, translated into Spanish. But this is really surprising to, you know, and anybody who listens to this program knows that we believe that a hand-counted paper ballot is the most reliable, credible way to cast your vote and expect it to be properly counted. And so those who exercise their right in California now to request a paper ballot are given this. And this reminds me of that label that's on your mattress, you know, says do not remove this tag under penalty of law. It's to scare people off, isn't it, from using a paper ballot?
Can I say something real quick?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
I was in touch with Deborah Bowen's office today, and the legal department, a lady called me back, and she can't find anything under HAVA regarding paper ballot advisory, and she knows nothing of this CAC 20100. She looked under EAC 20100, and it would not apply to this. So she has no clue what this is about.
And Chris has written an open letter to Claudio, the new registrar of voters. I don't have his last name in front of me.
No, he's the acting, and he'll be out on the 21st.
Oh, okay, he's the acting. Brad, go ahead.
Well, actually, I was just scanning HAVA here, trying to find some something along those lines. I sure would love to see that fax. You have the actual document, do you?
Chris does, and I have a fax copy of it.
Okay, well, hopefully I can get that from you after the show, because what they do say here is that, where was it? I just lost my place. That you should warn folks that if they foul their paper ballot somehow, that they're able to ask for a new one.
Well, that's at the bottom of this, but
yeah.
The warning at the top is that choosing to cast a paper ballot, you are at risk of over or under voting.
I see absolutely nothing in HAVA. Of course, I'm looking at it 2 seconds, but I've never heard anything of the sort. I would love to see that. And what county is that?
Monterey County. Take 3 minutes here. We're going to take a break and return. Chris, why don't you hold on, because we'll get a fax number from Brad and pass it along to you. And you could send the document directly to him. And we will continue to pursue this here on the Peter B. Collins Show. I really appreciate you bringing it forward. More in a moment with Brad here on the PBC Show. If you've got a question or comment, there's room for you. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. 12 minutes before the hour, this is the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You know,
the show on KRXA 540.
The
traffic. I'm traffic. Okay, let's get to San Jose. Got to talk about a signal alert being issued. It's northbound 680 before Berryessa. Grass fire. It's burning on the right shoulder. Heavy smoke visible from the roadway. We're going to mention that we do also have the fire department blocking the two. It looks like the three right lanes now, and traffic is slow from 101 southbound. Slows from Jacklin. So that's a big problem to report. Also want to take a look at Highway 17. No major stalls or accidents there. Hey, don't forget the Mazda Raceway at Laguna Seca. Expect delays on Highway 68. Other routes from the raceway today through Sunday as Laguna Seca hosts the U.S. Sports Car Invitational. So that should be a great time. Hey, this report is brought to you by NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams. Affecting our lives, making a difference, shaping our world, reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams on NBC 11.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I continue to be your humble host, Peter B. Very curious developments from Monterey County, where a special election is underway. We heard from Chris, who faxed me a copy of this paper ballot advisory. We got a couple of callers who want to comment on it, too. As we continue with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And on line two, we've got Caroline in Salinas. Caroline, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. I just noted the Monterey County South Main Street special election. Mm-hmm. And you walk in, and they ask you, do you want to do touch screen, or would you prefer to do paper? And they give you a paper to fill out for either one, for either one.
Right, I've got a copy of that here. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they do give you the advisory, and anybody can walk in and pick them up. They're bright green, and you just pick up the advisory and read it.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think when you read it?
A little threatened that they didn't want me to vote by paper.
Yeah, doesn't that strongly suggest the Surgeon General
is warning you? The Surgeon General.
That you may die.
They looked at me quite surprised, actually. They were very surprised I'd have voted by paper.
All right, Brad, you got a comment?
I'm sort of scanning the pertinent section of HAVA here with Help America Vote Act, which is not, what did they say, section 2001 or something?
It's 20100.
It looks as if, and this is a very quick interpretation here, but essentially you've got, if you've got an electronic system of some form, The system should notify the voter to the effect of casting multiple votes for, you know, overvoting, essentially. And yet, if it's a paper ballot system, all you need to do, it says the state of jurisdiction uses a paper ballot voting system, meets the requirement of this subparagraph by providing the voter with instructions on how to correct a ballot before it is cast and counted. I don't see anything about notifying them for overvotes or undervotes, however.
Let's talk to Steve in Salinas. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I went down earlier this week to vote at the county office, and it wasn't much of a problem at all. It took I didn't feel threatened. They just asked me if I wanted paper or machine. I said, paper, please. And, and it was no problem.
And did they give you one of these forms?
I honestly don't remember.
She just told us it was a big green flyer. It's a one-pager that says paper ballot advisory, and it's linked to application forms where to participate you either have to ask for a paper ballot or for a touchscreen process.
I don't think I was offered one of those.
All right, Steve, thanks for the information.
Okay.
Now, Brad, this just appears to be some extra step that has been imposed by Monterey County. The citation here about HAVA, is, at least as far as we can determine, is not relevant, may not even exist. And I've never seen hoops like this where you have to fill out a form to use a touchscreen machine.
Well, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt without looking into the details as far as if it was early voting. I think you said it was early voting that this happened in.
Right.
Which I think is regarded similarly to absentee balloting. So, in other words, I think you have to fill out an application to be allowed to do the early voting, and that way that information is in. Then when your ballot comes in, and if you try to vote on election day, you won't be able to, essentially. So,
right, and just to be clear here, there's a point four here. After you fill in your name and your address, it says this application will not be accepted without the proper signature, and then you have to certify that you haven't applied for or do not intend to apply for an absentee ballot from any other jurisdiction. I certify under penalty of perjury under law of the state of Oklahoma that the information I've given is correct.
Nothing there sounds completely out of the norm. But a couple of questions certainly come to mind. Why do they seem to be warning people about using paper ballot? And number two, I'd love to know, I don't know when the election. Have they already had the election in Monterey?
I don't know the specifics. I think they're in the early voting, and I would expect that the actual election day is the first Tuesday in June.
Okay, well, a good question to ask the Monterey County Registrar at this point, whoever that happens to be, would be, when do they plan to count those paper ballots? Are they going to count them at the same time that they count normal ballots in that election on the same Tuesday, or are they going to put them off until several days after the election,
which
is an important point.
You bet. I hope people will investigate that, and I really appreciate Chris bringing this to our attention. Brad, just about a minute and a half remaining. Let's talk briefly about San Francisco, which uses ESNS scanners to tabulate ballots, and the registrar here has said that based on the new certification requirements announced by the new Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, that the machines don't meet certification, and they are planning to hand count paper ballots this November, absent some other development. And Mayor Newsom was on television the other morning, and he said, well, if that's the way it has to be, I'm running for re-election, and I want to make sure that every vote is counted.
Well, good for him. Yeah, they have been fighting about that in San Francisco, moving to this new system, Sequoia system, fighting about whether there will be disclosed source code or not. And now ESNS has apparently been late in turning over their materials to the Secretary of State for certification for this, upgraded system that they've been using. It's an old system, but they're upgrading it. And Bowen, to her credit, said, no, you guys took too long. Sorry, you're out of luck. So it's a nice change of pace from the rubber stamp of the former Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson. And if they have to go to hand count, why, it should be an interesting election, won't it?
Sure would, yeah. Well, Brad, this has been an exciting hour.
It may actually be an accurate election, too, for a change. That
yeah,
would be nice.
Better than Sarasota.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fabulous. Thank you very much. Next week, you'll be on with Tony Truppiano, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
I look forward to it. Have a good one, Tony.
In the meantime, you got to... Oh, Tony's the other guy.
That's right.
In the meantime, you got to visit bradblog.com. I'm Peter B. Collins. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back at you Monday. Same time, same stations, with another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show.
Again, happy trails.
Hi, Sheila Gale here with 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Addiction and Recovery Talk, Saturdays 4 to 5, now expanding to Wednesday evenings 7 to 8. Taking shame and blame out of addiction, we take responsibility and treat it as the disease that it is. Great guests and great call-ins. Addictions, 12-Step Talk, it's about time. Now twice a week, Wednesday evening 7 to 8 and Saturdays 4 to 5. Brought to you by Sun Street Centers, building healthy lives in Monterey County. Sun Street for recovery and prevention.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective, here on KRXA 540.
Progressive talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. It's still a stalemate over funding the Iraq war. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports today's talks on Capitol Hill ended in stalemate after 90 minutes.
It's not a total surprise that things went so badly. President Bush won't accept Congress telling him how to conduct the war, and Senate Leader Harry Reid says Democrats are determined to make him listen.
The American people want our troops to come home.
Democrats offered to let the president waive troop withdrawal deadlines if he explained why, but White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolton said no.
Timelines for withdrawal are just not the right way to go, and that cannot be the basis for funding our troops.
There may be more talks, but Democrats say in the meantime they'll go ahead and write a new funding bill on their own. Bob, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Since the invasion, the Government Accountability Office says the United States has spent more than $300 billion on military operations in Iraq. The president's asking Congress for nearly $100 billion more. A follow-up to Wednesday's report on FEMA's toxic trailers. CBS News investigative correspondent Armin Katayan has now learned officials were aware of the problem a long time ago.
We were able to obtain an internal document that shows that FEMA was aware of extremely high levels of the cancer-causing chemical formaldehyde inside these trailers more than a year ago, after its own employee safety department ran tests in March of 2006. And many of those tests, 20 of the 28 tests on those trailers, showing levels of formaldehyde in one case as much as 1,000% higher than what the EPA workplace limit allowed.
Some children living in FEMA trailers since Hurricane Katrina have developed chronic respiratory problems. The stock market's on a roll. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus followed today's action.
The Dow Industrials continue their record run. It was another record close for the Dow. It now closed above 13,500 for the first time ever. And the S&P 500 now sits at a seven-year high, just 5 points shy of a new record.
She credits strong corporate earnings, a wave of takeover activity, and a report today that showed consumer confidence is running high despite rising gasoline prices. Regular now averages $3.13 a gallon. Northwest Airlines has won court approval to emerge from bankruptcy at the end of the month. It's cut annual operating costs by $2.4 billion, and industry consultant Mike Boyd says they're in a good place.
Northwest, number one, has some of the sharpest management, and the revenue streams are generated by the deep